Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. Huh. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. I bring you Christmas contraband and ancient tales from
Right, all right, all right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. It's Tuesday. That means two for Tuesday. You made two for Tuesday. One artist, two songs. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. Two for Tuesday requests. Get them in now. 312-981-7200. Welcome, everybody. We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich follows at 5 with the opening bell and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It is a Tuesday morning. Got a lot of stuff planned for the show. We're going to kick it off in just a couple of minutes here with Tom Appel. Our good friend Tom, he joins us once a month to talk about cars and any automotive-related news. He is from Consumer Guide Automotive, and you can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And Tom will be here to talk about some automotive news and to answer any and all of your car-related questions. If you're in the market for a new or used car or leasing a car or whatever, you have any car or automotive question, Tom will be happy to help you out. That's what he does when he gets here, so he's going to be here after the first break here when we come back. So you want to get your questions lined up, talk or text 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Any and all car-related questions, and Tom Appel will help us out with that. So, Tom, my producer, Tom, you are a Game of Thrones viewer.
As of yes, unfortunately, at times
I am not.
No.
The Game of Thrones made a lot of news on the intranets yesterday because evidently someone left like a Starbucks coffee cup on the set of a show that doesn't have Starbucks in its reality.
No, not yet. Maybe that's in like a sequel series. They'll bring
so
in
I think it's hilarious, quite frankly.
Yeah.
I thought it was hysterical when I saw the thing on the internet, and I busted out laughing. I thought it was hilarious, and so that gets me to thinking about some of the other, you know, continuity movie mistakes and goofs from the past, and we've got a bunch of those. I mean, there are a lot of weird movie mistakes that have been made over the years. So we're going to jump into that, and we'll tell you about what this whole Game of Thrones coffee cup thing is. So, like last week, everybody was mad because the episode was too dark. This week, everybody's mad because some idiot left a Starbucks coffee cup on a table on the set, and nobody caught it.
I'm really hoping for something next week, too.
Yeah.
Like, there's got to be now.
Every week there's something new to complain about with Game of Thrones so far this season. But we're going to talk about that goofy mistake. We'll tell you the behind-the-scenes story about that. And then we're going to go back and look back at some of the most sort of ridiculous continuity and movie goofs of all time, which is a lot of fun. And in fact, I'm hosting a screening of one of a movie tonight that has one, that has a pretty significant one involving a kid extra. Do you know this story, Tom?
I don't.
About North by Northwest. I'm hosting a screening of North by Northwest.
And I've seen that movie a few times.
And I hope you guys can make it. It's the tickets are on sale right now. Reserve your seats. It's tonight, 8 o'clock, AMC Rosemont 18. And in fact, a little bit later on, we're going to talk about Cary Grant, because it's one of Cary Grant's most successful and best movies. And he's one of my favorite actors of all time. And so we're going to talk about Cary Grant a little bit later on in honor of the screening that I'm hosting tonight of North by Northwest. And I hope you guys can make it tonight. 8 o'clock, AMC Rosemont 18. $10. Parking is free. Starts at 8. I'll introduce it. We'll watch one of the greatest Alfred Hitchcock movies on the big screen the way it was meant to be seen. And then I'll talk about it afterwards. And I would love to see you guys tonight. So reserve your seats right now. Go to the seating chart. Pick out the seats you want. They'll be waiting for you tonight at 8 o'clock for North by Northwest on the big screen. And that's amctheaters.com. AMCtheaters.com. It's also Teacher Appreciation Week. And so we are going to talk about some great teachers from movies and great teachers from TV. And then I want to open up the phone lines and the text lines for you guys to give a nice shout out to one of your favorite teachers and talk about the inspiration that you've had, some of your favorite teachers from the past. Give them a nice shout out here on the radio. Let them know how much you their teaching meant to you. So National Appreciation. I also have some discounts that teachers can have during this week at different places, restaurants and supplies and things like that. So we'll get into National Appreciation of Teacher National Teacher Appreciation Week. We'll talk a little Cary Grant a little bit later on, movie mistakes, Game of Thrones and coffee cups, and we'll start it all off with cars with Tom Appel. Any and all automotive or car-related questions or concerns, advice that you need, any of that stuff, call us or text us right now at 312-981-7200. Let me see, officially say hello to Tom Hush, my producer. Tom, how are you?
I am doing great.
All good.
Although that Cubby game, just depressing, really.
Yeah.
Just depressing.
I mean, you know, they won 7 in a row and they can't win every game. Let me preface that. But, you know, it was the Marlins and it was Strope and they hit into 4 double plays last night. And on top of that, they did everything. They weren't getting hits, but at one point, there were 9 walks that were issued by the Marlins. They actually were responsible for 10 walks, and we didn't win the game. At one point, the bases were loaded in the bottom of the 6th. The bases were loaded, nobody out, and they only scored 1 run out of that. You can't do that.
No, that's prime scoring time.
Yeah, they score 13 runs against the against the Redbirds, and then they can't beat the Marlins. That was a depressing win or loss actually. But hey, you know, today's another day. They play they play today unless it rains or something. So, but anyway, yeah, the Cub game was brutal, So, and I love the fact that we were all very very happy they were in first place. That lasted a day. So let's go to the newsroom and Vic Vaughn. Vic, you didn't see any of the game, so you're lucky.
I saw the last bit when I got into the newsroom. Okay. We were already down, though, so I didn't realize we had lost the lead in the 9th inning.
Yep. It was 4-3 going into the 9th. They brought Strope in. He walked the bases full. Next thing you know, it's 6-4 going into the bottom of the 9th. Bryant did get a solo home run in the bottom of the 9th, made it 6-5, but we couldn't get that extra run to tie it.
Yeah, you and I were talking about Strope in here earlier, and I said, you know, I'm a little nervous when he takes the mound. But then again, you know, we talked about that great game he had where his car got stolen,
right,
and then he took the mound later and ended up helping them win the game.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was a ground out, but
No, it's tough. Sometimes, you know, I have to say this. You know, it's easy to scream and yell about these guys, but it's tough to be a relief pitcher, especially a closer. There's a lot of pressure.
Big time, yeah.
You know,
that's what you get paid for, though.
It's true.
I get it.
I didn't want, going into the 9th, I was, not comfortable with a 1-run lead and Strope getting in there. There's, anytime Marmol would come in, whenever they would put Carlos Marmol in, I would be like, oh, God.
Right, yeah.
You know, so it's just that, but anyway, it was a really depressing loss, especially after the week that they had, the last 10 days that they had, and then coming off a sweep in the Cardinals. That was a rough game last night. But all right, hey, you know what? Today's a new day. So there you go. All right, let's take a break, everybody. And then when we come back, our good friend Tom Appel is going to be with us. He is from Consumer Guide Automotive, and he is here to answer any and all of your car-related and automotive-related questions That's what he's here. And text us or call us at 312-981-7200. We got automotive news to talk about and then answering any of your questions about cars and automotive stuff. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we are 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago here until 5 a.m. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. Yeah, it is Tuesday. That means two for Tuesday. You mean two for Tuesday? Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. One artist, two songs. 312-981-7200. All right. Every month, our good friend Tom Appel joins us. He's from Consumer Guide Automotive. You can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom, and you can check out consumerguide.com. If you have a question or a concern about cars or automotive-related issues, it's 312-981-7200. Let's welcome Tom back to the show. Tom, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me again.
Absolutely. It's always, always, always a pleasure. All right. Tell everybody, as we always do, about Consumer Guide Automotive.
Yeah, we've been around since 1967. We committed to being digital back in 1995, that's what it was. But we haven't looked back. Yeah, but we have all sorts of new car and used car reviews at consumerguide.com. We try to have some fun with what's going on in the auto world, and that's at our blog. You can get there through consumerguide.com or go there straight to cgdailydrive.com.
Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I love, we're going to talk about some of the stuff that was written on the blog. I like worst car ads of the 80s.
I love doing that one.
Yeah, I think we're going to have some fun with that. But we have some serious, car-related stories to talk about and some news. And anybody has questions, they want some help, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. So what do you, I always ask you, what have you been driving? What are you driving now, Tom?
Wow, this is a crazy week to ask me that. I am driving the 2019 BMW M5 Competition. Mm. This is BMW's midsize sedan in full-out sport form. The M5 features a 600-horsepower twin-turbo 4.4-liter V8. The Competition gets you 17 more horsepower and even more aggressive suspension tuning and some other stuff. But it's a crazy car. One of the craziest features about it is these carbon ceramic brakes. They are an $8,500 option, and they make this car a little bit difficult to drive in town because they're so grabby, but they have unbelievable power on the highway. So if for some reason you're ever going to do any crazy Autobahn driving, this is your car.
Well, how does it drive just on, like, regular streets?
It's a bit of a handful in traffic.
Yeah.
I actually made a point of taking the car out on Sunday afternoon and getting on a Route 53 and just opening it up. And, yeah, fabulous car. But may not be everyone's cup of tea in traffic.
Okay. All right. What else have you been driving since the last time we spoke?
I am in the Chrysler Pacifica Hybrid this week, which is an interesting car. It's the only hybrid minivan you can buy right now. This car is an S-Trim. So the S-Trim is very sporty. It's sort of blacked out, and it's got black wheels. So it's a little bit at odds with what you think a hybrid might look like.
Yeah.
But overall, this is a very nice minivan.
Okay. All right. Well, that's what you've been driving lately, and everybody can check out consumerguide.com. For all that information. And we've already got people who are calling in and texting in, Tom. We can get
a couple
of questions in, and then we want to talk about some of the car news stories. Here's Dave on WGN. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah. Hi. Well, I'd like to go on the Autobahn, that's for sure. my question being, we were considering a Ford Transit, and I was wondering about the positives and negatives, you know, compared to the other producers that make similar models.
Yeah, if you're looking for a large passenger van, that's kind of the way to go. The Ford Transit is redesigned for 2019. I haven't had a chance to drive that yet. But the reviews were good of the old version. I suspect the new version isn't going to be very different. The Chevy Express and GMC Savannah are still out there, if that's something you're thinking about. Are you doing this because you need to haul around a lot of people?
Yeah, I'll be hauling freighter, you know, boxes and so forth.
Oh, okay. You know, another car that's out there, another vehicle that's out there, kind of a mid-sized van and very popular with contractors, is the Mercedes-Benz Metris. Not much discussed, but it's very popular with Mercedes fleet operation.
Ah, okay. Yeah. All right.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. And the name again was?
It's Metris, M-E-T-R-I-S.
Metris.
Oh, okay. And they're familiar with it.
Okay. Yeah, a lot of people aren't, but it's actually making people very happy.
All right.
Okay. Well, thanks for that.
All right,
thanks so much.
Take care. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for Talk and Text. Tom Appel is with us from Consumer Guide Automotive. 773 area code says, is the Jeep Trailhawk a good off-road SUV for the price tag, and is leasing smarter than buying?
That's sort of an incomplete question. Trailhawk is a off-road package offered on a lot of different versions of Jeeps.
Okay.
So, but yes, the Trailhawk, if Jeep uses the Trailhawk trim level on any of its vehicles, it means it's a fairly legitimate off-roader. I would test drive that before you drive it, because the ride is much firmer around town, and generally fuel economy takes a hit.
Okay. All right, so that's there's some questions for you, and if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 for Talk and Text. Any questions that you have automotive related for Tom? You know, a car was introduced at the 2019 New York International Auto Show. When was that?
Oh, that was just a couple weeks ago.
Okay, so tell me what was there anything notable about the New York Auto Show?
And just that there's an awful lot of legitimate product. New York often has a lot of sort of high-end stuff, and you'll find that BMW or Mercedes offers like a bunch of strange trim. Strange is the wrong word, but low-volume variations of stuff. But this year there was just a substantial amount of really high-volume regular product there. It was actually a lot of big news.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, what about this Genesis Mint concept?
This is interesting because Genesis, which is the luxury arm of Hyundai, this is their first concept vehicle, and the Mint is not a crossover, so that's refreshing. But it looks a little bit like a Tesla Model 3. It's mint in color. It's actually a really cool color. People might want to check out that picture. But its most interesting and striking feature is its beetle-like rear doors. So they open a little bit like gullwing doors, but they're hinged towards the back, and it seems a little bit like a beetle about to take flight.
Oh, wow.
Good-looking car. I doubt we'll see anything like it in production, but it's nice to see Genesis of all companies wheeling out a concept.
Wow. Okay. All right. Now, how long does the New York Auto Show, how long does it last? Is it like a week or so, something like that?
Yeah, it's very much like Chicago. It's about 10 days or so.
Right. Okay. And is that one, have you gone to that one recently at all?
I haven't gone in a number of years. It's a strange show in that they don't quite have the space to do it. Manhattan is just, that's where the show is. Just the show's on three levels, and it can be difficult to navigate, and some manufacturers are pulling out just because they don't like the show.
All right. Well, that's interesting. That's interesting about that. So, yeah, New York is, I mean, because first of all, if it's in Manhattan, you shouldn't be driving anyway.
So the whole that is the irony of that show.
The whole thing is that you don't want to be in a car in Manhattan. I mean, that's just not good. Okay,
no.
Tom, hang on, okay?
Will do.
All right, we got a lot of news stories to talk about in terms of car-related issues. And if you have questions or concerns or you need some advice about cars, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Okay, we are taking a break for the news, which is coming up after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Tuesday. That means two for Tuesday. You're here, two for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. That's one artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. That is also the number to call or to text with any car or automotive-related question. If you need some advice, Tom Appel is our guest, and you can call or text us right now with any of the car question that you have at 312-981-7200. And again, Tom Appel is from Consumer Guide Automotive. You can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom, and you can check out consumerguide.com. Let's welcome Tom back to the show. Tom, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. So The Justice Department is have a criminal probe open up for Ford emissions certifications.
Yeah, the facts of this story are a little slim and a little slow in coming, but this is a very strange story because it is the Justice Department and not the EPA or the California Air Resources Board looking into this. In fact, Ford felt compelled to share the information that they were being investigated with those two agencies. So what we can assume from this probably is that there's a whistleblower involved, and there may actually be something going on. But for people who don't recall how this works, Ford, like every other automaker, submits data to the EPA to confirm their emissions and fuel economy numbers and ratings. And those numbers are processed and reviewed by the EPA, but the EPA does not test these vehicles individually. And if there's a mistake, intentional or not, Ford could be punished for this. This happened to Hyundai about 5 years ago. I think a lot of people may remember that, where Hyundai was forced to lower its EPA numbers on a bunch of vehicles.
And so what's the outcome here then? Well, you know,
it's a good question because we don't know what the actual problem is. It seems to be an emissions-related issue. And we don't know if this is going to turn out to be something related to diesels again, like with Volkswagen and a bunch of other companies. So there's just a lot we still need to find out.
Well, the Volkswagen story is still crazy.
It is crazy.
And still, I mean, I don't know if that one's ever going to be topped, do you think?
I don't know, because Volkswagen was so heavily penalized. There was actually jail time for some people, and the literally billions, multiple billions of dollars that Volkswagen is now spending to promote electric vehicles. People have probably seen the commercials now running on TV, and Volkswagen is paying to install charging stations. So the money's being put to good use, but they were severely penalized.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. All right. Well, we'll keep you posted on what happens with that as that criminal probe is rolled out. We have a few more people who are calling in. Here is Mike on WGN. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah. Hey, Tom. I recently got a 2002 Audi Quattro A8, and it's got, in the engine compartment, the spark plug area is covered with, a plastic covering, shroud-like, you know. I was wondering, does that cover need to stay on there? What I'm concerned about is that mice could get underneath there and build a nest, and I would never see it. So I'm wondering, can I take that off and leave it off, or what?
Probably. The plastic cover has come to replace any sort of dressing up of things under hood. If people remember looking under the hood of cars of the 60s, engines were glorious. But when we rolled into the 70s and emission equipment started to show up, things got ugly.
Yeah.
So manufacturers just started covering the engine with decorative shrouds, and the shrouds don't do much. They have nothing to do with heat retention or heat dissipation, but they might do some sound abatement. I'm not sure, and it depends on the thing. You can't go wrong taking it off, but you might find out that the car is a little bit louder. But, yeah, it doesn't serve any real purpose.
Okay.
Oh, good. Right. Well, thanks for that.
Okay. Thanks, Mike. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Joe on WGN. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, Tom. Nick, I appreciate this show. I've been shopping for a car quite some time. I called in about 6 months ago, and you recommended the Equinox. Beautiful car. It's just too big. Here's my objective. Since I've been getting older, I've driven big sedans all my life. I tried the Toyota RAV4.
Uh-huh.
Looks good. The size I want. And my two objectives. Number one, I don't want to crouch down to get into a lower car anymore. I want to be able to stand up and get into a small SUV. Took it on a test drive, and I went for the bumpiest roads I could find. And maybe I'm, spoiled with sedans, but the thing rode like a truck to me. So I didn't even know that Chevy made something called a Trax now. Would I be better? How do you view the Trax versus the Toyota RAV4 as far as ride, handling a bumpy road?
Well, technically, we consider the Trax a subcompact, where the RAV4 is a compact, so you would be stepping down in size. And that not wanting to step down into the car, you're going to lose a little bit of that height because the Trax does sit lower. That said, the Trax is a pretty nice car. It's fun to drive. I think it's actually a lot of fun to drive. I like it a little bit more than my colleagues back at Consumer Guide. One problem with that vehicle is the cargo area. if you need to put the rear seats flat, you push the driver's seat really far forward. So it's not very useful as both a cargo hauler and a passenger hauler, unfortunately. A nice vehicle in that class that you might like is the Hyundai Kona. This is all new from Hyundai. We made this a Best Buy for Consumer Guide, made this a Best Buy for 2019. About the size of the Trax, better use of space, and very nice riding.
Okay. All right, Joe, I hope that helps you out. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. So, Tom, the interesting story here that your next car may not allow you to speed on the highway. Yes. What's going on there?
Yeah, Volvo's been making all sorts of noise like this lately.
Yeah.
And if you're an auto enthusiast, you might find it all just a little bit scary. And I love what Volvo's been doing with vehicles lately. Their whole lineup is really just a nice bunch of cars. But they're talking about capping the top speed on vehicles by 2021. And I think the speed was 112 miles per hour that they would cap their speed at. Now, that may not sound like a lot. Who goes 112 ever? But for the cars that they're building that are all capable of going 130, 140, even 160, this is a really interesting place to start with in terms of sort of imposed safety. I think this may be the way things are going, because I think what we're going to find out is once Volvo gets closer to doing this, there's probably going to be a certain amount of insurance support for this. So this might be the beginning of a broader industry-wide top speed limiting effort, I think.
Even in cars that don't go 160 miles an hour?
Yeah, I think so. It's funny because in Europe, to avoid trouble for decades, Mercedes-Benz and BMW used to avoid listing top speeds or limiting them, just so that they wouldn't, the media wouldn't get a hold of these things, and they wouldn't start to alarm safety concerned people or the Green Party, which is very powerful in Germany. And I think that we might start to see an effort like that begin again.
Wow. Okay. All right, well, that's gonna upset people who like to drive fast.
It is. Although I don't know how many people really have the opportunity to break 110.
Yeah.
But it's still, just in concept, it's a little depressing.
Yeah. Okay. We got a couple of texts here, Tom.
Already?
312 area code says, I would like to replace my 2008 Hyundai Azera, but don't know what would be the most similar. Any suggestions?
Yeah, the Azera was an interesting car because it was almost a full-size car, and it was kind of a near-luxury thing that Hyundai was building, and it sold terribly. They couldn't give those things away, and I think it was just because people didn't know what it was. But it was actually a fairly nice, roomy, comfortable highway car. The closest thing to that available now is the Toyota Avalon. It's about the same size, and then the new Avalon's a really nice car. It's quiet, it's refined, it's relatively affordable and fuel-efficient, but that would be a good place to go for a replacement.
There you go. All right. And then 815 area code says, thoughts on Honda's new hybrid?
If they're talking about the Insight, we just reviewed one at Consumer Guide. The Insight is new for 2019, I believe. It might have been a 2018 model as well. But this is a replacement, more or less, for the Honda Civic Hybrid. It is a separate model, though. It has a nicer interior than the Civic. And we love the car. We actually made it a Consumer Guide Best Buy for 2019. It is relatively roomy. The interior is very nice. And even though we drove it in the dead of winter, we got close to 40 miles per gallon. I suspect that if we drove it again in June or July, we'd see closer to the advertised 45 or 50.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, that's, nice car.
That's great. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Talk or text your questions for Tom Appel. Follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom and go to consumerguide.com. All right. Another story that is interesting here is the rear seats of cars need better safety equipment. This was a study that they've done. What came out of this?
Yeah, this is a study by the IIHS, or the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety. And this organization is funded by insurance companies, so they're always looking for the next thing that should be done to improve safety. And one of the things that they've looked at is rear seat safety. And, of course, we've started with the driver. We moved on to the passenger, and the back seat kind of been neglected up until now. So the IIHS is sort of pushing that be the next place where automakers focus their safety efforts. And one of the things that they noticed that's interesting is chest injuries and impacts, forward impacts. And indeed, the the seatbelt system in the rear seat of a lot of vehicles isn't as well developed as the front seat one, and what they don't do is release in stages. Up front, if during an impact, if there's going to be considerable pressure against the chest, the seatbelt will relieve a little bit. To allow for that. That's not happening in the back yet. Now, also, Ford made available for a brief time inflatable airbags on the belts, and that seems to have sort of disappeared from availability, but that would be one solution, too. But they're also calling for things like sealing airbags, because you really can't put them on the back seats, the back of the front seats.
Sure.
So they're looking for places to integrate more airbags for the back seat passengers. So I think we're probably going to see rear occupant safety be the next big area of focus.
Yeah. Okay, interesting. All right, Tom, hang on, okay?
Will do.
All right, we got more stories to talk about with Tom Appel from Consumer Guide Automotive. Follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. Tom's going to hang on. We're going to take a break. When we come back, more car talk with Tom Appel right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 o'clock. It's Tuesday. That means 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. One artist, two song. Get your request in right now, 312-981-7200. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We have been chatting with our good friend Tom Appel from Consumer Guide Automotive. You can go to consumerguide.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom, and he can answer some of your concerns and questions that are car and automotive related. And here is Tom. Tom, welcome back.
Thank you.
So does anybody feel bittersweet about discontinuing the Beetle?
Probably not.
No.
Probably not. The second coming of the Beetle was something of a disappointment because mechanically it was very much like any other Volkswagen. It just happened to look like the Beetle of yore. But it wasn't air-cooled. It wasn't rear-engined. It didn't make a really weird, flat, bloody noise when it drove around. It was just very much a modern car that looked like a Beetle.
Yeah.
And there was a whole lot of interest when it came out, but sales have fallen sharply, literally, since its introduction.
Well, the Chicago Tribune wrote a thing called A Bug's Lifespan. A look back at the famous Beetle now that it discontinued production. What about the history of this car?
Yeah, this is a fascinating car because its roots date back to none other than Adolf Hitler, who was looking to develop a car that could help the masses hit the road. And Adolf Hitler was something of an admirer of Henry Ford, and he wanted a vehicle similar to the Model T. And I think a lot of people don't know this, but the Beetle was actually developed just before the war, and it was never really distributed in Germany. But what they were doing was allowing people to pay for them with coupon books that they would buy on a weekly or monthly basis. They'd buy these coupons to fill the books.
Okay.
And when they filled the book, they could get a Beetle. But what happened was, even though a lot of people were getting ready to just pay for a Beetle, the war broke out and production shifted, and the Beetle was never actually built for German consumption. After the war, production started back up slowly, and it was sometime in the late 40s, early 50s that Beetles started arriving in America. And a lot of people made fun of them, but they were just deadbolt reliable. They were efficient and really cheap to keep on the road. And then they built this legend for reliability that they're still known for.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they were an interesting. It was an interesting car. I drove a Beetle one time, and it was a weird drive.
Yeah, it wasn't the most pleasant thing to drive, but it had a lot of character. And if you could take care of your own car, this is a car that you could keep on the road for pennies a day.
Yeah.
It was relatively fuel efficient and incredibly cheap to own because it was just reliable and the parts were cheap and it was just so simple to fix.
Yeah. And but then the rebirth, as you said, is a completely different car.
Completely different car. It was mechanically very similar to the Volkswagen Golf, and it had to be. The old Beetle was really, it wouldn't live up to emission standards or safety standards, and it certainly wasn't quick enough to keep up with modern traffic.
Yeah. And I mean, we all had, our memories of the Beetle. Of course, we will always have Herbie the love bug.
We will. We'll have Herbie.
Yeah. And, yeah. So have they stopped production now already?
Production may have just ended. There's a vehicle now called the Farewell Edition that's out there right now. It's really nicely equipped and kind of a deal. Consumer Guy just drove one. It was the convertible SEL, and it came to like $31,000, really nicely equipped. Mm. So might be an interesting vehicle. It's not going to be collectible. There's too many Beetles out there, yeah. But an interesting car. It might be fun to own.
Okay, well, that's a history of very interesting history for that car, for the Beetle.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Quick question. We got one more. I want to talk about the worst car commercials of the 80s. 815 area code says, good morning, guys. I was just wondering Tom's opinion on using E85 in flex fuel vehicle.
You can do it. E85 is just 85% ethanol, and a flex fuel vehicle is a vehicle that can accept that fuel. You don't want to put it in any other car. You can use it. Generally, you'll pick up a little bit of performance, but your fuel economy will drop by about 25 to 30%, and this is because alcohol has a lower BTU rating than gasoline. So you can do it, but the price doesn't usually make sense from an economic point of view. And it's not as green as people originally thought it was going to be. So 85 now is really kind of a political hot potato. You see it all over Iowa.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the corn growers are big on
it.
Sure,
I bet, man.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even thought of that, yeah.
Yeah, it's all over that state. It's not as common in Illinois anymore.
Okay, all right. Hey, you wrote a piece about the worst car commercials from the 80s. Can you tell us what inspired you to write this?
Well, really, it's the first ad there that inspired me to do this. This ad has actually haunted me since the day I saw it back in like 1982. And this is an ad for the Chevy Citation X11, which, by the way, was an excellent performance vehicle. And I don't know what this ad is about because it doesn't discuss the performance of the vehicle. Instead, it features a guy who kind of looks like a cross between a superhero and a Coke dealer. And he's single guy. They call him single guy.
Right, single guy.
And the X11 is this car for single guy. And for some reason, this guy attracts these women in pink jumpsuits, not jumpsuits, like shorty outfits, that are attracted to a guy that doesn't really want to settle down with a woman. And it has nothing to do with the car. And it all looks so weird and neon and disco. And it's just, it haunts me in my nightmares.
Wow. So you thought, let's find some more of these terrible commercials from the 80s.
I did, yeah. I spent some time. This is what I do at work.
Yeah, let's say, you got a hell of a job, Tom. You got a hell of a job. 1982 Toyota Corolla Tercel. What's this commercial about?
Yeah, okay. First of all, the Tercel, great little car. I don't know what it has to do with a really whiny guy who pretends to be Tarzan. None of this commercial makes any sense. For some reason, this Tarzan is lethargic and whiny and uses his car to go about his business. He has an assistant who is a chimp. And at one point, he seems to question whether or not he should save a guy from drowning in quicksand. I'm not really sure what the message is here.
Well, by the way, if you want to see these commercials, they are attached to this to the piece at the Consumer Guide blog. So make sure you check it out. You get to see the commercials. The 1986 Yugo.
Yeah, this ad is a crime against God and nature.
Yeah.
It actually shows a Beetle, this is topical, being pulled out of a garage and being replaced by a Yugo. And it's just no place on earth where that's an acceptable swap.
Mm.
The Beetle, legendary for its reliability, and the Yugo, of course, you could hear rusting. It just, it's not good.
Okay, the 88 Chevrolet Celebrity Eurosport.
The Eurosport, a little bit like the X11 we talked about in the first ad, kind of a sporty vehicle. So I don't understand why in this commercial it's being driven around really slowly through a swampy area past a bikini-clad woman who seems to be very interested in that car. And I'm thinking, if I was a bikini model, I could do better than a celebrity. It's just none of it makes any sense. And I don't know why the car is being driven slowly.
Right.
It's not what the car is supposed to be about.
Okay. And then the 1989 Sterling. I don't even remember that.
No one remembers Sterling, and that's just fine. Sterling was a really weird product brought over by Group Rover in England. and it was based on Acura mechanicals, which should have been a good thing, but it was built in England, and all sorts of mistakes were made. So this car came here, good-looking car, supposed to be sort of a Jaguar-like vehicle, incredibly unreliable, but they ran this ad for it where it's being driven around aggressively with Bond music, and then the bombshell in the movie is that the door opens, and Sean Connery or Roger Moore, not driving, it's Patrick McNee for some reason. And he says, "Are you surprised to see me?" I don't get it.
The big surprise
is how unreliable this car is. It's very strange.
The Sterling. Okay. And then finally, the 91 Oldsmobile Silhouette.
Yes. Yeah, so I broke the rules, went into 1991. This is an ad for the Silhouette, which is known in Get Shorty as the Cadillac of minivans, featuring Leonard Nimoy's daughter, Julie Nimoy. And it's just filled with terrible Star Trek puns.
Oh, no.
And you really wish they would have just licensed the Star Trek deal instead of having to allude to it. But at one point, she refers to her quote-unquote enterprising family, wink, wink.
That's genius.
Yeah.
Again, you can read the full article and you can see the terrible commercials at Consumer Guide blog. You can go blog.consumerguide.com. Tom, always a pleasure, my friend.
Well, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Always fun. And we'll talk to you next month.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Okay, take care. Tom Appel, everybody. Consumer Guide Automotive. Follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. News up next. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We are here until 5 a.m. It's Tuesday. That means 2 for Tuesday. You're here 2 for Tuesday. And who requested the Stones?
That was Sam wanting to hear a little Stones. Can't you hear me knocking?
Yeah, it's a great song. Welcome back, everybody. Hey, it's National Teacher Appreciation Week. And so we're going to appreciate some teachers because they deserve to be appreciated. And we're going to give some shout outs to some of our favorite teachers. If you have a favorite teacher and you want to give them an acknowledgement on the air, talk a little bit about them, tell us why you love them so much. We're also going to talk about some freebies and deals that teachers get during this week at businesses here in the city. And also best teachers in movies and best teachers in TV history. That's all coming up. But before we get into that, Game of Thrones made the news again. Last week it was because nobody could see the battles because it was too dark. This week, a coffee cup ended up on the set, and it made the final cut of the show. Here's what they say that they wrote about this on Deadline. In a show that's as meticulous about everything as Game of Thrones, how did a very 21st century coffee cup end up in last night's The Last of the Starks episode? More important, how did the beverage find itself sitting in front of Emilia Clarke's Mother of Dragons? What's her name?
Daenerys.
Daenerys? What's her last name?
Targaryen.
Okay.
Daenerys Targaryen.
Daenerys Targaryen. All right. I don't know. I don't watch the show. This is why I stopped watching it. It's because of names like that. That's why I stopped watching the show. Well, after the slip-up or sip-up, depending on your point of view. Oh, boy. Come on now. Wait a minute now.
Good for you, Deadline.
That's right. They drank some of their Henny Youngman juice before they wrote this. Before it took off online on Sunday, HBO decided to come clean about what happened in the fourth episode of the eighth and final season of the blockbuster drama from executive producers David Benioff. Who, by the way, wrote my favorite Spike Lee movie.
Which one was that?
25th Hour.
What? Wait, that was David Benioff?
In the book, based on the book that he wrote, too. He wrote the screenplay and based on his book.
Wow.
Yeah, he wrote 25th Hour.
Wow.
Still has, as far as I'm concerned, my favorite Spike Lee movie.
I mean, it's spectacular.
And D.B. Weiss, based on George R.R. Martin's writings. And you might find the craft services and art department matter amusing. The latte that appeared in the episode was a mistake. The premium cabler said in a statement, stating the obvious, that Daenerys had ordered an herbal tea. Oh, see, more craziness right here. Oh. It's a media-mocking and somewhat successful effort to put the continuity issue to rest. Surely it will to be digitally erased from the David Nutter-directed episode later. The Starbucks-looking cup wasn't just fleetingly visible for, like, the tens of millions watching. In the middle of the triumphant and telling victory feast scene after last week's long night demolition of the Night King and his army... I'm just giving spoilers away just now. Right?
Kind of, yeah.
I'm just reading this. I'm sorry. Anyway, for this not being the first time a visual trip-up has occurred on Game of Thrones, and maybe the May 12th penultimate episode fans will be treated to a visit to an actual Starbucks or a boutique Java joint in King's Landing itself. So that was clearly a continuity error or a goof. There should not have been a Starbucks coffee cup on the table in front of the mother of the dragon people, or whatever the hell she is. So that's what we call a continuity error or a goof, and there have been many. And so we've got a bunch that we're going to talk about here, and if you want to jump in with your favorite movie goofs or mistakes or continuity errors, because they're fun, they're funny, and they're fun to find. You should join us right now, either talk or text with your favorite continuity movie goofs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. So I'm hosting a screening of North by Northwest tonight, and I hope everybody can come out and see it. North by Northwest does have a continuity goof. It you would think that a movie directed by Alfred Hitchcock wouldn't have that, you know. But indeed, it happens, and it involves a bad young extra in a scene. Now, it's mentioned in this article that I have in front of me. It's actually number 7 on the list of goofs. And if you want to see this live and on the big screen tonight, I would love you all to come out. $10, parking is free. We're at the AMC Rosemont 18, formerly Movie Co., really easy to get to. And you're going to get to see one of the greatest Hitchcock films of all time in VistaVision and Technicolor, as it was meant to be on the giant screen, digitally remastered. Cary Grant, Eva Marie Saint, James Mason, Martin Landau. It is a great, great, great movie, one of the quintessential Hitchcock thrillers, and you get a chance to see it very rarely on the big screen. So it's tonight. 8 o'clock, I'll introduce it, and then we'll talk about it afterwards. So get your tickets now. Reserve your seats now by going to amctheaters.com, going to the seating chart, and picking out your seats, and we'll see you tonight at 8. So here's the deal with this one. Now, you didn't know about this one, Tom.
No, I did not.
It's really funny. It's really funny. So here's what they write about in the article. Alfred Hitchcock is known for the control he exercised throughout the filmmaking process. Every decision he made was intentional, and each and every one of them contributed to his status as a legendary director. Still, even legends make mistakes. During one key sequence in North by Northwest, when Roger Thornhill is shot by his one-time lover and current enemy near Mount Rushmore, one child in the background covers his ears before the gunfire rings out. So, like, this was maybe take 3 or take 4, and the kid didn't like the loud gunshot noise, so you can see him visibly put his fingers in his ears before the gunshot. he's the bottom right corner of the screen, near like the bottom, right center, and he's sitting at a table. They're in, like, a cafeteria outside of Mount Rushmore. It is later revealed that the gun was firing blanks. But that doesn't seem to matter to the little boy who just wanted undamaged eardrums. North by Northwest is still revered as a classic today, one that sets up the template for hundreds of thrillers to follow. The goofs here don't hurt the film. If anything, they remind people it exists and give people a reason to check it out. After all, how else will you see where James Bond really started? And that's what a lot of people think about North by Northwest. It was the original template for the James Bond movies. So
yeah,
I cannot wait to see it on the big screen.
Yeah, and it uses a lot of the same tropes.
Yeah, yeah, and man, the location. I mean, all the locations and the classic, you know, set pieces. We mentioned Mount Rushmore, and I mean, what can you say about the crop duster scene? But anyway, so this kid sticks his fingers in his ears. and it's before the gunshot. And that's the take that's in the movie.
Well done.
Yeah. It's funny because, you know, again, this is Alfred Hitchcock. We're talking about movie mistakes and goofs and continuity errors. And if you know of any and you want to share them, talk or text 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Now, this is not a movie mistake or continuity error, but it's a thing that gets under my skin and makes me crazy. I don't think you and I have ever talked about this. I've talked about it on the air before, but before you started producing the show. There are certain sort of cliches that happen in TV and movie, and we all know that. And there, some of them make me a little crazy. And here's very close to the top of the list of things that make me absolutely crazy. Another reason why it's fresh in my mind is because they do it in Long Shot. I can't stand it when people go into a bar and say, "Give me a beer," and they get served one. It makes me absolutely nuts as a professional post alcoholic who did a lot of drinking.
Yeah.
I'd never ever once go, "Can I get a beer?" and then get one.
But you know why they do it. You can't say the name of the beer.
They're
not gonna pay for Budweiser to sponsor the movie.
Right. So anyway, that makes me nuts, and they did it in Long Shot. O'Shea Jackson Jr. comes up to the bar. Seth Rogen is sitting at the bar. And he comes, "Hey, give me a beer."
I would kind of like for them to pass across just a bottle that just says beer on it.
Yeah.
Like a white label, big black letters, beer.
Yeah, like in Repo Man. So anyway, that makes me crazy. And, you know, we're talking about like this movie mistake with this kid sticking his fingers in his ear before the gunshot sound goes, and that was directed by Alfred Hitchcock.
Mm.
Well, Stanley Kubrick did the "Can I have a beer" thing in Eyes Wide Shut, and I was so... I remember watching it going, "Come on, Stanley." And he was even more anal than Hitchcock.
Yes.
I mean, he was nuts. So, and it was... I'm blanking on the actor's name who meets Tom Cruise. He's a piano bar guy. It's going to make me crazy, but he's the piano bar. He plays the piano and he meets Tom Cruise at the bar, and he walks up to the bar and he says, "I'll take a beer," and they give him a beer. And I'm like, "No, that's not how it works. You have to tell the bartender," unless they only have one beer.
Right.
You know, like McSorley's. Have you ever been to McSorley's in New York?
No.
McSorley's is the oldest bar in New York, and all they have are light and dark, and it's because they make the beer there. They have a dark beer and a light beer. So you just go up there and you just go up there and say, "Give me two." And they're served in small glasses.
Mm-hmm.
So you can drink a lot.
Mm-hmm.
This place is so old that it used to just be for men, which is not surprising. Consider, you know, a lot of old taverns were just, you know, for men. But they didn't start allowing women in McSorley's until the late 70s.
What?
Yeah.
Oof.
They didn't allow women until the late 70s in McSorley's. And so the other thing about McSorley's is there are no stools at the bar. You walk up and you stand at the bar.
There. Yeah.
You stand at the bar. There's tables.
Sure.
But you stand at the bar. And it's, oh, I mean, you get the history in there is crazy. I mean, you could just feel the history and you can smell it too. But here's another thing about McSorley's that's kind of amazing. There was right underneath the lip of the bar when you're standing at the bar. So at your feet, there was a groove that was cut into the bottom of the bar, like a long groove, and it was tilted like this wooden bar, and it was tilted. This groove was tilted like a long row, and that was because guys would relieve themselves right there.
Ugh.
They would just stand up and pee.
Yeah, talk about
right
smelling the history,
and that
My
would
God.
Go down into be a hole like a sewer or something. It would go down, so the guys never had to leave the bar.
Well, that's, you know, modern problems require modern solutions.
McSorley's. It's a great place, though, man. I mean, if you're a drinker and you want to go into one of those, like a legendary bar, oldest bar in Manhattan. It's really great. But anyway, so only there could you get away with just saying, "Give me a beer light."
Well, you kind of get that in the UK, similar but not the same thing, where, you know, different pubs, they only carry like one type of each. So you ask for a lager, it's going to be whatever the house lager is.
Yeah.
You don't be like, well, you know, maybe I'm feeling this. It's just going to be a lager or a stout or
yeah,
an
that's,
ale.
No, I mean, I know that there are places like that in the UK. I realize that. But, you know, well, wait a second. Eyes Wide Shut takes place in the UK. Doesn't know it takes place in New York.
Yeah, New York.
What's the matter with me? Because it doesn't look like New York. It was shot in the UK. That's why I was getting all confused. The most un-New York looking movie that takes place in New York. All right. Anyway, so movie mistakes is what we're talking about. Continuity errors, coffee cups from Starbucks on a table in Game of Thrones is what inspired this. A young extra sticking his fingers in his ears before the gunshot in North by Northwest. These are the kind of things we're talking about. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Talk and text. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, 2 for Tuesday. Yippee, 2 for Tuesday. A couple of Rolling Stones songs to kick it off. And if you want to jump in, one artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. That's also the phone number to call or to text your thoughts on movie continuity errors or movie goofs. And this is all inspired by this last episode of Game of Thrones, where there was a modern 21st century Starbucks coffee cup that was actually included on the set in the shot and was not removed. So we're talking about some of those kind of continuity or movie goofs. Mark the Breadman says, my favorite movie goof is the stormtrooper bumping his head in Star Wars Episode 4. Mentioned in this article, obviously. This is really a funny one. I've watched that thing on repeat. I've watched the guy bump his head, the Star Trooper bump his head. There are four stormtroopers running through this doorway, and he's the guy on the right in the back, and he bops his head on the ceiling. So that's a classic one.
And if you have the most recent release of this original trilogy on Blu-ray, they actually went in and added a very slight little bonk sound effect. Like they added a sound effect to him hitting his head on the top of the door.
Wow.
I know.
Wow. Okay.
And the whole thing gave rise to a fan theory that stormtroopers have really bad eyesight.
Yeah, because they can't shoot.
Because they can't shoot anything.
Right.
So what they did, you know, the whole thing, they're clones of Boba Fett's dad. When he appears in Star Wars Episode 2, they did a little
nod. Which is clones, right?
Yeah, Attack of the Clones. Okay. They did a little nod to it. There's a bit where Jango Fett is going into his ship and hits his head on the top of the door to give credence to this idea that he had bad eyesight.
Okay. I don't remember that. I don't remember anything about Return of the Clones.
Just forget it. Just pretend it didn't happen. It's not good.
Oh, my God. But, yeah, so the stormtrooper bumping his head, that's pretty funny. You know, when they did the re-release in 97 of the movies, one of the things that cracked me up that they made the changes was when... And again, I don't know these movies nearly as well as everybody else does. I guess it's when Luke and Han are dressed up like stormtroopers,
mm-hmm.
but they don't have the helmets on. And they run and they open a door and there are stormtroopers inside. And they're like, ah! And then they turn around and run the other way or they shoot at him or whatever. I love the fact that for some reason it just makes me, I just think it's hilarious that, like, they added, like, 100 stormtroopers to that room.
Yeah.
In 97. Like, they opened the doors, like, 900 stormtroopers in the room. And I always thought that was very funny. And I always thought the stormtroopers were hilarious because I like when they're talking, when they're just, like, talking shop. Like, when they're just walking down the hallway. Like, I'm just, like picturing them on break. You know, like, hey, how you doing there, Charlie? I'm all right. I'm pretty good.
Smoke them if you got them.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
I could see that as stormtrooper, like a cigarette hanging out of his mouth.
Hilarious. It's hilarious. All right, so that's a classic one, the stormtrooper banging his head on the doorway. Here's another one. I remember, because you know how I feel about this movie. I love Die Hard, too. I like it as much, if not more, than Die Hard. And I love this movie. And when the first time I saw it, and I've seen it a million times, the first time I saw it, the movie takes place at Dulles International, what used to be Dulles International Airport in D.C. And so John McClane goes and makes a phone call on a payphone, and it's a Pacific Bell phone. They don't have Pacific Bell service in D.C. And everybody in the theater, when we saw it, everybody in the theater went, oh, and it's right there. Like, it's not like in the background. Like, he's on the phone. It's a close-up of him on the phone, and it's right. The logo is right there.
Could have been fixed with, like, some duct tape.
Yeah, just put some duct tape over it. It's fine. Glenn and Evanston said, in the Goonies, Data mentions the octopus during an interview, but the octopus scene was cut from the movie. That's another movie I hate, so I don't... I've only seen that one just, like, the one time, so I don't know. All right. Movie mistakes, movie goofs, continuity errors, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. The news is coming after this. I'd be in trouble if you left me now, 'cause I don't know where to look for love. I just don't know how. Oh, girl, how I depend on you to give me love. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. It's Tuesday morning. That means two for Tuesday. You made two for Tuesday. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. Who requested that?
That was Paul, wanted to hear the Shy Lights.
There you go. All right. Welcome back, everyone. It is Teacher Appreciation Week, and we're going to shout out to our teachers, our favorite teachers, and tell some stories. We're going to talk about great movie teachers and great TV teachers. And also, there are a lot of really great deals that are being offered by businesses here in Chicago, you know, freebies and discounts just for teachers during Teacher Appreciation Week. So we'll get into that. Right now, though, we are talking about movie continuity errors and goofs and mistakes. Because of the Game of Thrones thing, the modern coffee cup from Starbucks on the table in the scene during Game of Thrones, and nobody caught it. So we've been talking about some of these other movie continuity errors or mistakes. If you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200. Braveheart has a pretty good one.
It's got many.
Yeah. Braveheart
Okay.
Braveheart is a movie of epic proportions. It won Best Picture in 1995 for good reason. It tells the story of William Wallace's revolt against King Edward I during the 13th century. It's easy to see how much effort must have been expended on this film, on the film's climactic battle sequence. Unfortunately, the crew's hard work may have a little more present on screen than anyone anticipated. When the English charge on Wallace's Scottish forces during the battle, a white car can be seen behind the legs of the oncoming cavalry. It's only there for the briefest of moments, but it sort of breaks the film's period illusion. Braveheart had other minor goofs as well, including a man with a baseball cap who was clearly a member of the crew walking into frame. Mel Gibson, who directed and starred the movie, may have set a bad example for his crew. He worked behind the camera and in front of it, and he inspired the members of his crew to do the same. So... There's another one like that, where like a crew member who's like in regular street clothes... is walking around. Raiders. In Raiders, there's a scene where they're in the village with the monkey, and then the sword fight that doesn't happen. He just shoots the guy when they're in that village. I can't remember what country it is.
I want to say they're in Morocco.
Yeah, I think so. There's just like a dude with like a headset on and a pair of shorts, like walking in the background of the shot.
Like Bigfoot, you know.
Ooh. Yeah, just kind of like walking around. Yeah, I even think he was like looking at notes or something about like, you know, what he was supposed to be doing on set. And he's just kind of like walking.
So, first note, don't walk in the shot.
Yeah, don't walk into the shot. Terry says, Nick, I'm sure you remember that one movie that is full of continuity errors is Stripes. It's an awesome movie, but several blunders. The big one in Stripes that I remember is... when Bill Murray is in the middle of the night, is trying to leave, he's trying to go AWOL, and Harold Ramis comes out and attacks him and says, you're not leaving, you know, you talked me into this, that whole thing. He's got, at one point, he's got a hat on, and then it's off, and then his bag, because he's got a duffel bag, his head is on the duffel bag, and then it's not. And so, I mean, it goes back and forth. Like, every cut, there's one weird, you know, continuity error after another. Ike and Country Club Liz said an airplane flew past on the set of Gladiator. Gladiator also had another one, too. They not only had, like, the airplane, but, yeah, the airplane in Gladiator. But it also had a, when they were showing the, man, now I'm blanking on the whole thing here. Hold on a second. I think it's in this article. Yeah, here it is. In Gladiator, we see that the ancient Romans apparently had gas canisters in their chariots.
That was a big one.
Also, we were quite sure that no planes were around in those times. How can you make a mistake like that and not realize it when it ends up in the cinema? I'd just like to point out that movie won Best Picture.
God knows why.
What year was that, 2000?
Yeah.
2000. What should have won that year? Crouching Tiger was my favorite movie.
I think it was up against Crouching Tiger.
Yeah.
But that did win Best Foreign Language.
It did.
So
it did. Well, I mean, you know, like it was up against Gladiator was up against four better movies, as far as I'm concerned. I do not like Gladiator. I don't think Gladiator is a good movie at all. Let's see. Dave Johnson from Rochester, Minnesota. Michael J. Fox and Teen Wolf in the very end of the very last scene. The game's over. The crowds and they're coming, peeing out of what? The crowd and peeing out? No, peeking out? The girl stands up and her jeans are unbuttoned and unzipped and she starts to button and zip them in the original movie. I don't remember that at all. I've only seen Teen Wolf the one time that I was forced to see it. 8708 area code says Saturday Night Fever, a boom mic appears in the scene near the end for a while. That's a common one, and here are some of the reasons why that happens. If that happens and you're in a movie theater, well, not anymore, because it's all digital now. But in the old days when it was just film and there was a projectionist up upstairs in the booth, if you saw a boom mic, 9 times out of 10 is because the projectionist did not frame it properly. Because when they shoot a movie, they give enough room on top and on bottom for when how the movie is supposed to be framed in the theater. And so 9 times out of 10, not now, obviously, because everything is digital and it's all computerized, but back in those days, if you're watching a movie, if we see a boom mic in Alien, in a couple of weeks,
oh yeah,
it's badly framed. But they don't do that at the Music Box because they're pros.
Yeah, professionals.
But yeah, that's 9 times out of 10, that's the reason why. Here's Jason on WGN. Hi, Jason.
Yes,
go ahead.
Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Uh-huh.
When the freshman's taking out Jennifer Jason Leigh, the older guy, the bookie, tells him, "Hey, you want to set the mood? Put in the first side of Zeppelin 4."
Right.
He puts the tape in. Hey, Led Zeppelin Cashmere starts playing.
Right.
Cashmere is not on Zeppelin 4.
No, it's on Physical Graffiti. Yeah, I know that one, Jason. And some people, I think somebody said that to him. Put on side one of Zeppelin 4, and then Cashmere is playing when he's on the date. And any self-respecting Zeppelin fan knows that Cashmere is not on Zeppelin 4. It's on Physical Graffiti. But, you know, I think Cameron Crowe, who wrote the movie, Amy Heckerling directed it, but I think they sort of like said, Cameron, how the hell could Cameron Crowe get this wrong? How is it possible that Cameron Crowe could get this wrong? He basically toured with the band for a while and he wrote about them when he was 15, and knows this stuff. How could he get it wrong? And then he said, the excuse was, Jason, you might want to listen to this one. The excuse was that Rat, the kid who's on the date, is stupid, and he made the mistake, not the filmmakers. Like he listened to the scalper's advice, whatever the scalper's name was, listened to the scalper's advice, and then made the mistake by putting Physical on instead of 4. That's Cameron Crowe. I think that's Cameron Crowe's argument, is that we didn't make the mistake. The character did.
Uh-huh.
So
nice save.
Yeah. And I guess maybe that was supposed to be a laugh line. Like, oh, look how stupid he is. He's got Cashmere playing. That's not how I took it. I took it as Cashmere's not on Zeppelin 4. So, all right, Jason, thanks for the call. Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. He had a rough time in this movie, Harry did. He lost his godfather. Dumbledore wouldn't talk to him, and he had a pretty horrible defense against the dark arts teacher in Dolores Umbridge. On top of all that, he was also getting peeks inside Voldemort's head, ones that often came to him as troubling dreams. During one key sequence in which Harry had a vision of the Department of Mysteries, he seemed to be sweating through his short sleeve crew neck t-shirt. After a short time, he's startled awake by a vision of Voldemort's face. When Harry sits up, he has a button-up Henley shirt on that would appear later in the film after Harry faces another vision. It's true, of course, that Harry Potter lives in a magical world filled with all sorts of unbelievable things. Still, we don't remember ever hearing a spell that allows you to instantly change out of a soaked sweat t-shirt. Don't remember that.
Could be useful.
Yeah. Sure. That's a good spell to have. 815 area code says, I can't remember the name of the movie, but the lead character had long shoulder-length hair and must have had to reshoot the climactic shootout in the end sometime later, but unfortunately the actor must have cut his hair. The reshoot had him wearing a very obvious woman's wig. My wife and I were on the floor. Yeah, when you have to do reshoots, that's, you know, when you have to do reshoots, sometimes, you know, like a couple of them, the terrible, the Superman beats up Batman or whatever the hell that was.
Batman versus Superman?
Yeah, or was it the? No, yeah, no. What was the last one? I can't remember.
Justice League.
Right. Okay, Justice League.
Yeah, with the mustache.
Right. Yeah, because they had to CG out his mustache because Henry Cavill had a mustache for Mission Impossible, because he was filming Mission Impossible and he had the mustache. And if you've seen Mission Impossible Fallout, he didn't need a mustache.
Yeah, and plus, how is it easier to not just shave and put on a false mustache than to spend however much money to pay the special effects guys to
CG it out? It's ridiculous. Completely ridiculous.
That's Henry Cavill's fault.
Well, that's also just how bad those DC movies are. I mean, just like, that's the thinking, that's the logic behind those. You know, and everybody was like, oh, Joss Whedon's going to save this movie. He didn't.
No.
There's only one scene in that movie that rings of Joss Whedon. One scene only in Justice League. And that's when Aquaman is oversharing because the invisible lasso is wrapped, the lasso of truth is wrapped around him and he doesn't know it. That's the only scene. I was like, okay, Whedon wrote that scene.
Yeah.
Whedon wrote that scene. Nothing else in the movie felt that way. And then there's another superhero one. Look at the shawarma scene.
Yeah.
He's got a beard. Chris Evans has a beard. So his hand is up over his face the whole scene at the end. You know, the tag on? Speaking of Joss Whedon, at the end of the first Avengers, he had to cover up his beard. They had to go back and reshoot the tag. And so he had grown a beard for another movie or something. And he had. So if you watch the end of the very end of Avengers when they're eating the shawarma, which, by the way, is hilarious because they're just very silently sitting in this place eating shawarma. But yeah, he's got his hand up over his face to cover the beard that he had. So that's another one. Facial hair will do it every time. All right, we got a break here. We're going to take a break. We got some commercials and we're going to come back. We've got more movie goofs and errors, continuity errors and mistakes. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. All right, all that coming up more right here on 720 WGN. Classic. Two for Tuesday, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. One artist, two songs. Get your requests in now, 312-981-7200. Coming up, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right here on 720 WGN. In honor of the goof that happened on this past Sunday night's episode of Game of Thrones, where a modern-day Starbucks coffee cup was seen in a scene, we are talking about movie continuity mistakes, movie goofs, and movie errors. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Pulp Fiction. There are a few in Pulp Fiction. Pulp Fiction is about as beloved as movies get, yet it falls victim to the simple continuity error. What's worse, the mistake comes during everyone's favorite scene, the one in which Jules first unloads his diatribe, scripture and all, on the unwitting Brett. Is that everybody's favorite scene?
It's a lot of people's favorite scenes. Mm. What's your favorite scene?
Well, the walk-in monologue.
Oh, yeah, yeah. About the watch.
About the watch. Yeah, that's my favorite scene in the movie.
I'm always a sucker for the very beginning with
oh, yeah. I mean, it's fantastic. I mean, well, the movie rules.
Yeah.
The movie rules. I mean, there's just no question about it. I also like when Travolta comes out of the bathroom and gets killed. That's one of my...
Oh, yeah, the Pop-Tart. Who knew that the best ticking time bomb in film was Pop-Tarts?
That's one of my favorite moments in that movie, too. Oh, man, and also when they hit the bump and Jewel and Travolta blows the kid's head off.
Oh, yeah, when
Man, you just shot Marvin in the face! Oh,
it's Phil Lamar, right?
Yeah.
He shoots Phil Lamar right in the face.
Yeah. After the scene where we discover there's another man yet unseen hiding in the bathroom, the small apartment with a gun, by some miracle, this surprise assailant shoots at Jules and Vincent and misses, despite unloading the revolver at point-blank range. What's strange about it, even before he unloads, there are already bullet holes in the wall behind him. This moment is a transformative one for Jules, who decides that being that his life was spared has been an act of divine intervention. The whole thing becomes a little harder to buy when you realize that if Jules had looked behind him before the guns were fired, he would have found out that they were holes in the wall. Yeah. So, we got more texts coming in. Sam says, in Vanishing Point, the original one, in the end, when he sees... When he crashes into the bulldozers, the car is a Camaro instead of a Dodge Challenger.
Really?
That's a pretty big one. Doc says, Nick, I think there's scenes in Dazed and Confused where when the two guys cruising around and the two guys in the back seat are shown having traded places from shot to shot. And my vote for best movie teacher would be, I got to hand it to Mr. Hand in Fast Times. We're doing movie and TV teachers coming up in a little bit in honor of Teacher Appreciation Week. 920 area code says it's a wristwatch in Spartacus. Willie up in Gurney says, I didn't like Gladiator either, but loved Academy Award winner Lisa Gerrard. All right. Here's Trucker Rich. Hey, Rich.
Hey, Nick. My favorite one is out of Bullet, the Charger that has unlimited hubcaps.
Right.
And the guy that's... He's probably dazed and confused, driving around in a blue Volkswagen, trying to avoid those guys all night.
Yeah, because the Volkswagen shows up in about 10 different shots in that chase scene.
Yep, and they replaced the hubcaps at least 40 right. times on that Charger.
Right.
That's a fast pit crew to have him stop and throw on new hubcaps absolutely. So they can lose them at the next corner.
Especially in the middle of San Francisco. Yeah, that doesn't happen very often. All right, Rich, thank you, man.
Yep, have a good one.
Take care. let's see. Teen Wolf, which we just talked about. All right, here's another one from Quentin Tarantino. Reservoir Dogs. It seems Quentin Tarantino doesn't really care about continuity. The guy has more important things to worry about, like what exactly Madonna's biggest hit might be when discussed in the opening scene of Reservoir Dogs. The film looks at the aftermath of a heist gone wrong, one which ultimately leads to the imprisonment of a cop. While working on the film, it appears Tarantino got so focused on the systematic torture of this cop that he left continuity at the door. Various shots of the cop reveal that he is handcuffed from both front and back. The point of handcuffs is to keep the handcuffed individual from moving their hands. So either these handcuffs are highly ineffective or Tarantino forgot to handcuff the same cop the same way in every scene. Since handcuffs with this particular defect aren't really a thing, the second option seems more likely. Tarantino loves tightly written dialogue, but he's far less interested in perfect editing. Just ask that cop.
Yeah. Him and Scorsese.
Yeah. Gone with the Wind. You know, one of my favorite line readings ever in the history of film is?
What?
Tony Shalhoub in Barton Fink. I love him. That's my favorite Coen Brothers movie. But I love Tony Shalhoub in that movie. He's fantastic. My favorite is when he brings Turturro back into his office and to see how far along he is on the script, and he's not very far along, and Lipnick is calling him, Michael Lerner, Lipnick, is calling Tony Shalhoub because he's taken an interest. But my favorite is Wallace Beery wrestling picture. What do you need, a robot? A roadmap? Because they assigned him to do a Wallace Beery wrestling picture. And so he's like, Wallace Beery wrestling picture. What do you need, a roadmap? But before he says that, he says, you're not writing Gone with the Wind. Like, he doesn't remember the title. The movie takes place, by the way, the movie takes place in 1941. Yeah. Like, a year and a half after Gone with the Wind has come out. Gone with the Wind is the biggest movie ever made. And he blanks on the last word. I'm almost positive that was a choice that Shalhoub made in the line reading. If it was in the script, because I will say this, though. Jeff Bridges says that every F-bomb, every delay, every pause is in the script for Big Lebowski.
Yeah. I firmly believe that the Coen brothers told Tony Shalhoub to do that.
what are you, Gone with the Wind?
That's just so funny.
It's like, hilarious. It's so Gone with the Wind? Gone with the Wind, let's see. Even so, Gone with the Wind was set almost 80 years before the time of its filming, with the advent of electricity coming after the Civil War. So when one of the lamps inside the massive plantation, Tara, where most of the film takes place, is pulled from its resting place and a cord becomes visible, then the illusion that the film was set in the 1860s starts to fade. The film's period inconsistencies may not be its biggest problem, even though you have to have some sympathy for the filmmakers. When you're making a movie like Gone with the Wind, it's got to be tempting to take a few shortcuts. There's a cord on one of the lamps. All right. We got a break here. News is coming up. We're going to talk more a little bit about these movie gaffes and goofs. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And it makes your life turn cold when it tears you apart. Your heart and soul just can't go on. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's two for Tuesday. You hear me, two for Tuesday? That's one artist, two songs. You pick them. 312-981-7200. What's that? Who requested that?
So that was Honeymoon Suite with the title track from Lethal Weapon.
Ike.
And yeah. you got him.
It's from Lethal Weapon?
Yeah, that's the song Lethal Weapon from Lethal Weapon.
I don't remember that at all.
I just remember the Eric Clapton stuff.
Was that in that wasn't in the first one.
As far as I know, it was, yeah. He did. I think he did all four of them.
Did he?
Eric Clapton, yeah.
Oh, okay. I remember the second one specifically with Clapton. But, yeah. All right. Hey, we're talking about movie mistakes, and we're also going to pay tribute to some teachers that we love that helped us. It's Teacher Appreciation Week. And we're going to talk about some great movie and TV teachers, and we want to hear from you guys about your favorite teacher in real life. But we're talking now about movie mistakes in honor of the modern coffee cup that was on the set of Game of Thrones. And we're talking about some big ones here. Mike in L.A. says, in Hard Day's Night, the Beatles are riding in a car and Lennon has on a turtleneck, and the next shot he has a different shirt on. Also, in so many movies, there always seems to be ice in the bucket when they want a drink, even if they've been gone all day. So the non-melting ice. Mark from the 630 area code. Nick, in Manchurian Candidate, towards the end, Frank Sinatra was shot blurry while cutting to Lawrence Harvey when it was crystal clear. John Frankenheimer left it in the movie because it eventually added to the mental dilemma of Harvey's character. Plus, Frank hated retakes. 312 area code says, Hunt for Red October, toward the end of the movie when Russians are abandoning the sub, a cameraman in jeans and white gym shoes can be seen. Okay.
Got a continuity error for you there.
Yeah.
Scottish man playing a Russian.
Yeah. Let's see. Avatar, when Jake opens the capsule, there's no sign of the wheelchair. A moment later, it appears out of thin air next to him. Terminator 2, Oh, I know this one. Terminator 2, I know this one. Early in the film, the Terminator shields John against the bullets from the T-1000 with his own body receiving a whole cartridge in his back, and then his coat is covered with bullet holes. A few moments later, it looks good as new. And then when the truck in which the T-1000 is driving and is in the chase with John Connor falls over the bridge, its front window falls out, and the next shot, it's back in. That's like in Commando. When the Porsche, is it a Porsche? I don't remember. But the car gets completely demolished, and then it goes back and forth from being, like, fine to having, like, the whole side of the car being ripped apart and damaged. Dallas Buyers Club. The film is set in 1985, but in one scene we see a poster of a Lamborghini Aventador. On the wall, and that car was only released in 2011.
That's got to be one of the hardest things to do, is doing a period piece.
Well, yeah, especially when you're going to have like a car expert watching the movie and going, oh, that car wasn't made until, you know.
Yeah.
I watched that movie, I didn't know.
Yeah, of course.
That's like with our good friend Ben,
mm-hmm.
Producer here at WGN. He filled in for a while when mm-hmm. we were in the transition period from going to Dan to you. And Ben, as you know, is an aviation nut. And when Captain Marvel came out, he told me that, you know, he liked it except for the scene where they're in the bar, and there are posters of airplanes and stuff in there. And he's like, yeah, that airplane... Because it's a period piece, it takes place yeah. in the 90s. And he said that those airplanes weren't around in that time. How are you getting? That was a background poster.
Yeah, I would be terrible at spotting those things.
Oh yeah, I don't know. I mean,
very bad at it.
Yeah, I was. He's looking at posters in the background. I was looking at Brie Larson. Thank you. I was concentrating on Brie Larson. Let's see. Apparently, the deck of the Titanic changes in Titanic. At the end of the Curse of the Black Pearl, Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl, there were several pirates in his gang that seemed to be fans of modern-day fashion. So I guess there's a group shot, and a bunch of them are dressed
normally.
Yeah.
Huh.
Marie Antoinette, which, by the way, is a movie I love. I know people hate mm-hmm. that movie. I love it. The only Sofia Coppola movie that I can't stand is the one where Stephen Dorff drives around for like an hour and a half at the beginning.
God, which one is that?
Somewhere. He's at the hotel, and it's his daughter. And at the beginning of the movie, he's just driving around in a circle. It's just one take. That movie sucks.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's a terrible movie. It's the only Sofia Coppola movie I wasn't crazy about The Beguiled, only because the original is a masterpiece. So,
well, you are a Clint Eastwood fan.
I am a Clint Eastwood fan. I'm also a Don Siegel fan. Don Siegel,
that's true.
Don Siegel's an amazing filmmaker, and that's a great movie. That's a really twisted, screwed-up movie. And, I, you know, when I heard that she was remade, because I like Sofia Coppola a lot. I think she's a great filmmaker. And, so when I heard she was remaking it, and I love Colin Farrell, you know, and all the ladies in it, I love them. And then I thought it was kind of toothless, especially compared to the original. The original. Have you seen The Beguiled, the original?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's a really twisted movie, man, especially for that time period, and especially, you know, for what Clint was doing at that time. Because, like, Dirty Harry had just come out. So he's like box office gold making these cop movies, and all of a sudden he does this twisted gothic horror movie. I mean, I was like, what? And he plays a real scumbag in it, and
yep.
I love that movie. But Marie Antoinette, a truly shocking mistake can be seen in this biography of the Queen of France directed by Sofia Coppola. It seems Converse shoes were popular among among the people of the 18th century.
Let them eat Chucks.
Here's one, Alien. You can maybe spot this in a couple of weeks when you're watching it in 35mm.
Curious.
At the time when John Hurt and the crew, when they find the alien ship, you cut to Kane, and he's wearing a special cap inside the spacesuit. You know, kind of like what Javi wore tonight, last night during the game.
Yeah.
But in white.
Yeah, yeah.
But when the face huggers got him, it's not there.
Like, because they were just like, we should probably get the. I always wonder.
The face hugger's on him.
But he doesn't have the space cap.
No. He didn't take it off because when he looks inside the egg in the face, you know.
Yeah, he's still wearing his spacesuit.
Yeah,
so there's nowhere it would have gone.
Right.
Way to go, Ridley.
Yeah. Nice job, buddy.
God, way to ruin it for everyone.
You know, we were talking about this. Eric and Colin and I were talking about this. You know, Ridley Scott's not made a lot of good movies. He's made a lot more bad movies than he's made good.
I maintain that he's made four good movies.
Four. Okay.
Four.
All right. Let's see. I'm trying to remember. Now, obviously, he's made two of the greatest science fiction movies ever made.
And there's two of them.
And Blade Runner, for my money, is the best science fiction movie of all time. Of all time. And Alien is a great film. So what are the other two?
The other two are Kingdom of Heaven, the director's cut, not the theatrical cut.
I have not seen the director's cut because I didn't like the...
It changes. It's one of those ones that changes a lot.
Okay.
It changes a lot in transition.
All right.
And then Thelma and Louise.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Thelma and Louise is good. Two things about Thelma and Louise I hate. Two things. One, I can't stand that because in the original ending, when they go off the cliff, it cuts to black, silent, and they show the credits. Which would be a much more effective ending than fading to white, having a lovely little song play, and then memories of their trip flashing all over the place.
Yeah.
He wanted to soften the blow because people were like, oh my God, these two characters are dead. And they did die. But, he had to soften the blow by putting this montage, cute montage. Remember when they were alive and they were happy and taking pictures of themselves and stuff like that. But the other thing that makes me nuts about the movie, I do not care how good looking Brad Pitt is. Gina Davis was sexually assaulted only hours before.
Yeah.
She would not go to bed with Brad Pitt. She was sexually assaulted and traumatized, and her friend killed the guy who sexually assaulted her. I don't care how good-looking Brad Pitt is.
That's
not the behavior of a woman who's been sexually assaulted hours earlier and her friend killed the guy.
No, I agree with that, but I still think it's one of his greats.
I agree. Yeah. It's a terrific movie. There's no question. And I'll tell you something, man. I've talked to Tobo about this movie, but he's so good in it. And the women are obviously great, and it's their movie. But the guys are hilarious. Christopher McDonald is genius in that movie. He's one of my favorite character actors of all time.
Chris McDonald?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he's one of my he's one of my favorites of all. I love him in everything, and he's so funny in Happy Gilmore. He is unbelievably
Shooter
funny.
McGavin?
Oh, my God.
I love it.
Do you eat pieces of crap for breakfast? No! my favorite take that he does in that movie, that Christopher McDonald does in the movie, is when Richard Kiel is standing behind him, you know, big Richard Kiel, nail in the top of his head, and he's not looking. He's standing behind him, and he's not paying attention to him. I guess he's lining up a shot, if I remember correctly. And so Richard Kiel goes, you know, Happy Gilmore's drive was at least 200 feet or something. Like, he says something along that effect. And he goes, and he's still not looking at him. And he goes, well, good for him. Oh my God. When he turns around and actually sees Richard Kiel,
sees Jaws himself.
One of my favorite takes ever is that. Well, I'm good for Happy. Oh my God. In the movie Ted, the main character, John, played by Mark Wahlberg, seems to be holding his smartphone upside down in all of the scenes in the movie, and it didn't stop him from communicating through it, though. I've never noticed that. That's pretty funny. That's pretty funny. All right. So we got a couple of more here. And then we're going to jump into teacher appreciation. We can talk about movie, TV, teachers as well. But you want to jump in, please do. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Talk or text. Movie mistakes, continuity errors, goofs. Talk or text. We'll wrap up that conversation and jump into teacher appreciation week coming up after the 3:30 news. So get in here with your thoughts on movie gaffes. right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We're here until 5 a.m. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. You may do for Tuesday. What was that?
That was a little bit more Honeymoon Suite from Ike, and the song is Bad Attitude from Miami Vice.
Miami Vice. Okay. All right. We're back here on 720 WGN. In just a little bit after the news here coming up at the bottom of the hour, we are going to jump into the topic of Teacher Appreciation Week, which it is right now this week. And I've got some freebies and some deals that I'll tell you about that you can get. And also we're going to talk about the best teachers in movies, the best teachers on TV. And we want to hear from you about your favorite teachers. Give a shout out on the air. Give credit on the air to these great people who affected your life and changed you. And I've got a few that I want to mention. And I know that everybody has a special teacher or two out there that deserve some recognition. And this is Teacher Appreciation Week, so we're going to do that. 312-981-7200. But we're still talking about movie goofs and mistakes, continuity errors, and so on. And if you want to jump in on that, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Here's Ron on WGN. Go ahead, Ron.
Michael Bay's second Transformers movie, in the car chase scene down the interstate, I think it's Shia LaBeouf going on the interstate, and they're being pursued by a Decepticon, and the interstate's being blown apart. That is a scene from another previous Michael Bay movie that was The Island, starring Ewan McGregor.
Oh, yeah, they recycled the footage.
Yep.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. They did the same thing in Blade Runner, in the cut of Blade Runner, that the theatrical cut that came out with the voiceover and all that stuff and the bad ending, those overhead shots of them driving in the car, those were outtakes from The Shining.
Really?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yep, they did. Okay, thanks, Ron.
Thanks, guys.
Take care.
Didn't they also, when they added the unicorn stuff, that's stuff that he had shot for Legend?
Yeah. Yeah, because there's unicorns in Legend. But you know, I've said this 9,000 times before, because I grew up on the original theatrical cut with the bad voiceover and the stupid ending. I still love that version. I love all versions of Blade Runner, all of them. But that's the one that I was, you know, I was 16 when it came out, 17 when it came out. And that's the one I saw 900 times in the theater. It's the one that I had on VHS. And then finally, when the other cuts came out, I was like, oh, it's a much better movie this way.
And I didn't even see it until the final cut was already out.
Yeah.
Which was like, that was like, what, 2007?
Yeah, I think
that was when that definitive cut came out.
How about this? There's a mistake in It's a Wonderful Life. Even wildly beloved classics make a mistake every now and then. After George Bailey has gone through an enormous ordeal in It's a Wonderful Life and realizes that his greatest contributions were to those he loves, he returns home to be greeted by a crowd of people who love him. He finds the family he thought he'd lost and the friends that can now remember who he is. This joyful moment is what the film has been building towards since its opening moment, but not quite perfect. During this celebration, a wreath very suddenly appears on George's arm. It's a Wonderful Life is a Christmas classic, so a wreath is absolutely appropriate. The problem is we never see George put the wreath on his arm. It's only there in some shots at the movie's end. George really had a wonderful life, but he can't explain where in the world that wreath comes from. Do not remember that. I've seen that movie 900 times, and I don't remember the disappearing and reappearing wreath.
The ghost wreath.
Some movies really benefit from a rewatch. Usual Suspects is certainly one of those movies. Another movie I hate that everybody loves.
Don't like the Usual Suspects?
No. But the only thing I like Benicio del Toro. That's the only thing in the movie that I like. I think he's hilarious in it. Certainly one of the movies with an infamous twist that we won't spoil here. But there are other things to rewatch, though. Even as it clarifies the plot, it will also reveal one of the movie's biggest mistakes. When we see a plane land from both front and back, we come to discover that the plane has four engines in the front, but only two in the back. This is strikingly mostly because of the absurd number of questions it poses. Did they use two separate planes? Did they do use different stock footage? It doesn't seem like it would be all that difficult to get the same plane for both shots. Empire Strikes Back. It's easy to get distracted by Harrison Ford's performance in The Empire Strikes Back. The man has swagger to spare, and his performance as Han Solo is among the most iconic in film history. The famously improvised line, "I know," the one he utters right before he is frozen in carbonite, might be Han's defining moment. Watching, it's easy to get wrapped up in the sheer charisma and brilliance of this moment and what it means for the characters involved. If you take a step back, though, you may notice something strange. For most of the scene, Han is wearing his iconic jacket. When the camera cuts to close-ups of his face, though, the jacket is clearly visible around his neck. I can't blame him. Frozen carbonite is probably pretty cold. Still, a mistake is a mistake. And if it's contained in one of the most iconic moments in film history, Harrison Ford, we love you, but decide whether or not you want to wear your jacket. I don't even remember that at all.
Mm-hmm. Too, like they said, too wrapped up in it.
Yeah. I just haven't, I mean, I have not seen the movie 9,000 times like everybody else. All right. How about Dark Knight Rises? I do not remember anything about this movie.
I don't either. I haven't watched it probably since I saw it in the theater.
I just remember not liking it. I remember I couldn't understand a word Bane was saying. I remember that. I remember Tom Hardy.
I thought it was an interesting choice.
Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy are three films some consider to be the standard bearer for all superhero movies. I don't buy that. Many believe The Dark Knight Rises is the weakest in the trilogy. While it certainly has merits, it's hard to deny the problems. Heath Ledger's untimely passing forced him to make edits to the script, and it felt at times like Nolan wasn't being as careful as he usually is. Forced him to make edits in the script for The Dark Knight Rises? What does that mean? Heath Ledger's not in The Dark Knight Rises.
He was supposed to be.
Was he?
Yeah, he was originally supposed to be in it. And then...
Well, yeah, because he's just hanging upside down at the end of The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Okay. At times, like, Nolan wasn't being careful. Wait a second. He had to make edits to Dark Knight Rises? Isn't Dark Knight Rises, like, 6 hours long? the word heist is misspelled on a newspaper.
Yeah.
The word heist is misspelled. So, all right. Well, there you go. Some movie mistakes to keep an eye out for. All right. We're going to break here, and then the news is coming up right after this. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Hear me, 2 for Tuesday. One artist, two songs. Who requested the Stevie Ray Vaughan?
That was coming to us from the
773 area code. Requesting some Stevie Ray Vaughan for 2 for Tuesday. 312-981-7200. All right. Welcome back, everybody. We're here till 5. Steve Grzanich will be in with the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. So it is 2019 Teacher Appreciation Week, and we want to say thank you to all the teachers out there, unsung heroes. And I know that everybody who's listening right now has at least one or two teachers that had a big impact on them, and it's time to give them a shout-out. We want to hear from you about who were the teachers. Let's give them a shout-out, give them a thanks on air. Who were the teachers that really made an impact on you and how they affected you? 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. So, Tom, I'm assuming you have a couple.
Yeah, I know one of my most influential teachers was over at Crystal Lake Central, and that was Craig Kingston. Mm-hmm. He was a English teacher, and the funny thing is I never actually had him as a teacher, but he was my improv coach, and he directed me in a few plays.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and you know, believe it or not, I was a pretty shy kid at times. I was very not confident, and he was kind of the guy that helped me get out of my shell a little bit.
Yeah.
And actually perform, leading up to me actually having leading roles in some of the productions in high school. So yeah, it was really great.
What are some of the plays you did?
So I was in Noises Off.
I love that play.
It's so much fun.
Yeah.
And it was nice because I love slapstick, and one of the things about me on stage is that I was really good at doing like pratfalls and taking hits because I was so big. I was always the biggest person on stage. So I think there's a bit in the, because it's just two acts, right?
Yeah, the first act is the play. The second act is what's going on behind the scenes.
Right. So in one of those, I had to physically fall down a set of stairs that they had actually built. And I did it for like 2 weeks straight, and he gave me the confidence to actually do it. He helped teach me how to do like a pratfall without hurting myself. Yeah. Although one night I almost broke my arm on stage in front of a full house.
Wow.
I had to be like, I was rolling down the set of stairs, and some of the crew members noticed that I was about to fall off the other side of the stairs.
Oh man.
Onto behind the stage. So without me even noticing, they quickly all got together, reached up, and pushed me slightly closer so I'd continue rolling down the stairs as intended. But it was great. I mean, he taught me the basics of physical comedy, and there were nights where people thought that I had actually hurt myself. They didn't realize that it was part of the act.
Yeah.
'Cause he said, what you do, he's like, after you do that fall, you're going to fall down these stairs. Like, I kicked a waste basket of paper to give it a little bombast. He said, literally, just lay there until they stop laughing and start getting worried.
Yeah, that's good advice.
Yeah, and it was hilarious every time.
That's the kind of stuff that I used to love to direct. I directed a lot of farces, lots of really quick entrances, exits, boom, 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 that kind of stuff. And there was a particular guy, and it was a lot of physical stuff. We do a lot of physical stuff. And there was a particular guy who his nickname was Beaver. He could take a hit in a pratfall like nobody's business. You thought he was killed. We did a parody of for Christmas. We did Escape from the North Pole, and I played Snake Plissken in it. And and the Pope gets kidnapped by Santa Claus in the North Pole. The Pope's plane crashes, and so they kidnap the Pope. So me and Mike Meredith wrote it, and we kept it really loose, so I let everybody improvise. And everybody in the cast, there was like a cast of 20 people in this ridiculous.
Oh my God,
ridiculous show. We ran it for about a month and a half during the holiday season, and so I let a lot of the people improvise. But and everybody in the show had seen the movie like 800 times, you know. And so the guy who played he played our version of Romero. So he had like he was an elf. He was one of Santa's elves, but he talked like Romero. And we had big hair on his head like Romero in the movie. Who, by the way, Frank Doubleday passed away like 3 months ago.
Really?
Yeah, Romero.
Oh my God.
From Assault on Precinct 13 and
Yeah. Frank Doubleday. Oh, wow.
He's unbelievable in Escape from New York. He's unbelievable.
Absolutely.
So anyway, he's doing his Romero antics, and so my buddy Mike Meredith has played Santa, and Mike's a big guy. Mike is like about 300. He's a big dude, and that's why he's playing Santa, of course. So he's playing Santa, and the idea was that he has to shove Mike across the stage, and Mike has to slam into the wall and then just completely collapse. The shove is long. It's three quarters of the way across the stage. So like when he shoves him, he has to fly across a good amount of the stage and then smash into the wall. And every night people would gasp when it happened, because he would like when he got pushed, he would bend his back like Mike just broke his back. And he would hit that wall, and every night it was pretty amazing. It was pretty amazing. Yeah, there are people who are really very adept at doing that doing those pratfalls and that slapstick stuff. And it's I love to watch that stuff. I do. So I'm glad that I'm glad he got you out of your show and helped you out. You know, so you could do crazy stuff on stage. So you got to be comfortable with yourself in order to do that kind of thing. And that's what your teachers do for you. You know, they a really good teacher will, you know, will inspire you and help you, and not just, you know, the subject that you're not just the subject that they're teaching, but to like really sort of affect you in a certain way. What was one more time for the teacher's name?
That was Craig Kingston.
Craig Kingston.
Yeah, still teaching out at Chris Lake Central High School. Honestly, and like after my dad passed away when I was 17.
Oh.
And so it was a really weird time.
Yeah.
You know, I was taking like the ACT and all the, you know, my future was supposed to begin. And in his own special, subtle way, Craig helped be like that figure in my life.
Because, oh,
you know,
great.
I had a lot of female teachers that were really helpful to my development, but sometimes you want someone who can understand yeah. where you're at,
yeah.
especially as a young man.
Especially with what you were going through.
Yeah. And know? he was one of many, but he really stood out. So he's probably not awake right now, but go Craig. He's the best.
Yeah. I got a couple, but my number one, and I've mentioned her many, many times on the show, Luther North High School, where I went, which is now closed, actually going to reopen as a Naval Academy, which is unbelievable.
Huh.
But I went there, and her name is Ann Rundio. Ann Rundio. While I was in school, I hated her because she was really tough. She was a very, very tough, a tough teacher. Her class was hard. She would challenge you, you know, and everybody kind of was like really sort of taken aback by her. Would never let you slide on anything. Would never let you slide on anything. She was an English teacher. She wrote. Yeah. She taught writing. So we have to write compositions and write all kinds of things. And she was brutal with the red ink. Brutal. Like the margins of whatever you would hand in were loaded with her red notes, the infamous red pen,
yeah,
of Ann Rundio. And you know, everybody in the class was just like, "Oh my God, it's so difficult. This class is so hard. Oh my God." And it wasn't until I graduated after years later, when I started writing plays, that I realized the impact that she had on me. It was the most impactful teacher I've ever had in my life, Ann Rundio, without question, my favorite teacher of all time. Of all time. I would not have become a film critic writer. I would not have been written. I would not have written about film. I would not have written plays or short stories or any of that. None of that without her. Without her being the way she was. So I go back to school. They asked me to come back. This was like in 2007. Principal asked me to come back to speak to the graduating class. Now I was like, what the hell? The principal, who by the way was one of my teachers, he was principal.
Oh wow.
He was one of my teachers when I was there, because I was there 79 to 83. Mm-hmm. This was in 2007, and he was now principal. Mm-hmm. So he asked me to come back, and this guy was one of my teachers who gave me as many detentions as you can possibly get. I graduated high school with a 2.2 grade point average. I was a terrible student in high school. I was really good in elementary school. But in high school, especially my senior year, I just did not care. I coasted by, except for Rundio's class. Rundio's class was the only one where I really, really worked my ass off. And so I'm like, you're asking me to come back and speak to graduating students? I graduated with a 2.2. And Mr. Daly said, yeah, but you have a radio show and you're successful on the radio, so just come back and talk to the kids. And I'm like, all right. So I went back to speak at the graduation, and I was really nervous to do this. And it was weird to be back in the school. And it's true what they say. When you go back to your high school, it seems a lot smaller than when you were there. And it does. And it was a small high school, Luther North. But anyway, so we go, and Mrs. Rundio's not there. And because she was still teaching at the time, and she wasn't there.
Oh.
And I was so disappointed because I wanted to talk to her and tell her, you know, face to face.
Like, look what you did.
Yeah.
You helped.
So I did the thing. I spoke in front of the crowd and I spoke in front of the class, and I asked the class. I said, okay, let me ask you guys a question. Raise your hand. How many of you have Miss Rundio? And they raised their hand, and I go, whew, and they start laughing. I go, she's rough, right? And there's like mumbling because they all felt the same way. They were all like, well, I don't want to say it, but yeah. So and the staff that was on stage with me when I was, you know, because we were all, it was a graduation. So the staff was on stage. They started laughing when I was talking about how hard Rundio is, because for all those years she had this unbelievable reputation of being a really, really hard teacher. So then a few years later, they called me up and Ann Rundio asked me to come in because she was doing a summer school class on film. And she asked me to come in and like co-host with her. And so, like, we watched two movies, and then we'd talk about them afterwards, and they would have to write a paper. So I go back to the school. This is about 2011, so it's about 4 years later after the last time. And she's still teaching. I think she taught up until the school closed, because the school just closed, like, a year and a half ago. So anyway, I get there, and I see her, and I immediately just go, oh, my God. And I look on her desk, and she's got papers of kids' papers, you know, of their assignments, red ink all over them. Like nothing had changed. So I got to, you know, talk to her and you know, tell her how much she meant to me and how much the impact that she made, not just while I was in school, but on my life. She was really, you know, really wonderful about it and everything. And she made me a sandwich that she brought from home for lunch for the break.
Really?
She's just a wonderful person, man. And so Ann Rundio, my favorite teacher, without question, the most impactful teacher I've ever had.
Shout out, Ann.
Yeah. So, Teacher Appreciation Week, that's where we are. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. If you want to shout out to some teachers, we're going to talk about great movie teachers, great TV teachers, during this, Teacher Appreciation Week. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio. It's Tuesday morning, 2 for Tuesday. You for Tuesday. Here till 5 a.m. And there you go. Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. It's National Teacher Appreciation Week. And I'm going to tell you about some freebies and some deals that are being offered to teachers in businesses all over the Chicagoland area. And we want to make sure that you guys can take advantage of that. You great teachers out there can take advantage of that, of these things. And we're also talking about your favorite teachers. And you want to give a shout out to them. Give them a thank you right here on the radio and let them know that they made an impact on your life. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 312-981-7200. Here's Judy on WGN. Hi, Judy.
Hello, Nick.
Hi.
Thank you for waking me up with this wonderful stories. Ah. I love the story about your English teacher. Also, I had a homeroom teacher. She was an English teacher. I never had her for English, but we had her for homeroom for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
She's 82. She just got back from Egypt, and she looked at us 50 years ago straight in the eye, called us by name, and gave us our diploma. She was the only teacher that never looked at a paper to call us by name.
Wow.
We had such a good time with her, and to this day, we're still real good friends, and we call each other all the time.
Oh, great. That's fantastic.
And then also, talking about your Anne, I had a cousin by the name of Mary that would do the same thing to all her kids and do the red ink and everything on her journals that she'd make them write.
Yeah.
She sat me down and she told me, in all honesty, do not go to college. And I looked at her and, Mary, what are you talking about? She says, you need to be with people. Work in any other field, but don't go to college. You won't be able to handle the bookwork or the paperwork.
Wow.
And I'm going, okay. And it turned out I went into retail.
Ah, well, there you go.
I never had a day that was the same. It was wonderful until I retired to have my children.
Oh, all right, Judy, thanks for the call.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, take care. Here's Mark on WGN. Hey, Mark.
Well, I had Bob Vihar in Clarence, New York. He was a choral teacher, and he got a college choir sound out of us. And when he retired, we held a retirement party for him. And when he died, we did an alumni concert for him that we ended up doing in Buffalo's Klein Hands Music Hall. That was the loyalty he commanded. And I would single out two traits that he had. One is that he was theatrical and he appeared to be a ham, but it was all about getting us to sing as best as we could. And one proof that he wasn't doing it for his own vanity was that he was asked to come back for a return appearance after he retired, and he said, no, I'm not going to do that until all the students who remember me are gone, because I don't want to upstage the new director.
Oh, wow.
That's and then cool. he defended, as gentle a man as he was, he fiercely defended a student one day. She was developmentally disabled, and some of the boys were picking on her during rehearsal. And so he stopped the whole rehearsal, and he said, now you boys have a choice. Either you leave and she stays, or you can stay and she stays. But she will stay either way, and they never picked on her again.
Wow. Wow. All right. That's a great story, Mark. Thanks for the call. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Mark the Breadman says one of the coolest TV teachers was Mr. Cotter from Welcome Back, Cotter. And my favorite teacher is my lovely wife, Megan Carr, who, by the way, Tom, was the stage manager for that show Among the Dead that you have a DVD of.
Yeah.
She was the stage manager for the show. Yeah.
Look at her.
Ike from Country Club Hill says that Edward James Olmos in Stand and Deliver was a very inspirational team. What's calculus? That's my favorite line in the whole movie.
How do I reach these kids?
What's calculus? 301 area code says, I want to give a shout out to my daughter, Becky, who teaches kindergarten. All right, Becky. 309 area code says, the amazing Jimmy K. Crown, rest in peace. And that's from Steve. So those are just some teachers that are getting some appreciation and some shout outs here. And we want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. So they're offering some really cool stuff. To say thanks to all the great educators, many businesses are offering freebies and deals to celebrate National Teacher Appreciation Week. Monday marks the first day. Yesterday marked the first day of Appreciation Week. The week aims to raise awareness on just how important teachers are. All week long, several businesses will offer deals for teachers. Some offers vary by location, so remember to call ahead to confirm. And we'll tell you all about them. I got a whole list of really cool deals and freebies that are offered to teachers. We'll give you the details on all that cool stuff so you can take advantage of it during Teacher Appreciation Week. So, all right. Take a break here. The news is coming up after this. She's the only one. No fear, but only night she's sailing to the crowd. It is the sports of tight and the music's playing loud. You get rock and roll in a rock and roll station. Great song. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We're here till 5 a.m. And it's 2 for Tuesday.
Yeah!
Who requested the Dire Straits?
Steve wanted to hear a little Dire Straits.
There you go. Cool. All right. It is Teacher Appreciation Week. And that's what we're doing. We're giving a shout out to some of our favorite teachers. And we're going to talk about movie teachers and TV teachers and all that cool stuff. And we were just sharing. I want you guys to share your stories with what teachers like really inspired you and really touched you, and you'll always remember them. This is the time, man. This week is a Teacher Appreciation Week. I think every week should be Teacher Appreciation Week. That's just how I feel. But this is the actual Teacher Appreciation Week officially, and we want to hear from you guys about your favorite teachers. And I was just saying that because of the Teacher Appreciation Week, there are a bunch of businesses that are going to offer several deals for teachers and some freebies and some really cool deals. Some offers will vary by location, and remember to call ahead to confirm. So here's the deal. Arby's. Some locations are giving teachers and school administrators with ID a free sandwich on Tuesday. So today, go to Arby's, get a free sandwich. Nothing wrong with that. That's a great deal. Cheddar's Scratch Kitchen. From Monday through Friday, teachers dining in can get a free appetizer with the purchase of an adult entree, and there's no coupon needed. Chipotle. Teachers, faculty, and other school staff with a valid school ID can take advantage of the buy one, get one free offer from 3 p.m. to close on Tuesday. The deal is on burritos, bowls, salads, orders of tacos for in-restaurant orders only and available for educators at all levels. So that's a pretty cool deal. CC's Pizza, teacher and school staff get free adult buffet Tuesday for National Teacher Appreciation Day with a valid school ID and a coupon. Mod Pizza, buy one, get one free. Pizzas or salads on today. Pluckers Wing Bar. Teachers get a free appetizer and half-price glasses of wine on Friday. Potbelly Sandwich Shop. All teachers get a buy one, get one offer Monday through Sunday, May 12th. Also, nurses, because it's Nurses Week as well, get a free drink or a cookie with the purchase of a sandwich or salad. ID or scrubs required. Come in your scrubs.
My mom would have to fish out the old scrubs. She's still a nurse, but she works on a more administrative side.
Oh, I see. Raising Cane's Chicken Fingers from 6 to 9 p.m. today, Tuesday. Teachers and faculty get one free box combo when they present the school ID. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's good for all my professors at Loyola. There's one right over there.
Yeah. Sonic Drive-In. This Teacher Appreciation Month deal is for teachers and those who appreciate them as much as Sonic does, quote unquote. From Tuesday through May 31st, get a free Route 44 drink or slush with the purchase when ordering on the restaurant's app. Use promo code TEACHERS. Tacos A Go Go. The restaurant is giving a 20% discount to teachers with valid ID all week long. Texas de Brazil. At this restaurant, you can get a hero's discount, or as they call it, any time. Texas de Brazil offers a 20% discount for service members, EMS, and teachers on dinner and lunch prizes. The promotion is valid once you show a badge or an ID. And then everyday deals at Apple, special education pricing on computers and other products for students and educators. Barnes & Noble, 20 to 25% off publisher's price, list price on all purchases for classroom use. Banana Republic, 15% off full-priced in-store purchases with valid student or teacher ID. J. Crew, 15% off online purchases for teachers and students. And West Elm, 15% off of all your next purchase, 15% off on your next purchase if you sign up at EDU Mail with an EDU Mail email address. So that's it. It's Teacher Appreciation Week. By the way, if you want to check out this article, because maybe you weren't writing anything down, our Facebook page, it's got it. It's linked up on our Facebook page right now, so you can get all the details. Because I kind of flew through the list, but if you want to take a look at it, you can write it down. It's on our Facebook page. So like us right now, facebook.com/NickDShow. facebook.com/NickDShow. All right. Let's see. We're talking about your favorite teachers. Which ones inspired you? Give them a shout out. Here's Jay on WGN. Hi, Jay.
Nick. Hi, Nick. I want to say that I like your show. Also, Nick, okay, I had great teachers in grade school, high school, and in college. I do want to give a shout out to a teacher who is deceased. Her name is Sister Honora. I went to a co-educational Catholic high school sponsored by the School Sisters of St. Francis in Kenosha, Wisconsin. You may have been familiar with their high school, the Alvernia High School on Lawndale Avenue in Chicago. It is closed now. She had taught there as well. And so I had suffered an epileptic seizure my junior year. So I want to give a shout out to her art department and her theater department, where I participated in acting in the school plays. And it led me into college, taking a degree in mass communication. So that's my my comment for you, Nick.
All
I
right,
want to thank you very much. I enjoy your show.
Thank you, Jay. Have a great morning.
Thank you.
Okay, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. I want to mention one more teacher. My eighth grade teacher, Miss Nagel. I think her first name was Eleanor. But she, I was a voracious reader when I was a kid. I mean, I read all the time. And so I killed in book reports at in my eighth grade, in my eighth grade class. We had like a little thing on the wall where you would put a star for every book report that you did, and I was by far, I was in the lead by everybody in you know, in the class. So this teacher, you know, obviously knew that I loved to read and that I read a lot and that I just kicked everybody's ass in book reports in eighth grade. Nobody was even close. Wasn't even close. So at the end of the year, right before we graduated, Miss Nagel got me a book. She bought me a book that she thought I should read. And she signed it and she said, "I hope you like the book, Miss Nagel." And it was The Chocolate War by Robert Cormier. And it is the seminal book of my teenage years, without question, a book that really changed my outlook. And I know this sounds kind of weird, but I learned to be cynical because of that book. And I learned to question authority and not blindly follow whatever authority says. Question everything. Have you ever read the book? Do you know? Are you familiar with the book?
Yeah.
So it's a book that is first of all, it was a Watergate allegory at the time when it was written, but it was about this Catholic school where there was a chocolate sale that all the students were going to participate in, but one of the brothers, Brother Leon, struck up a deal where he was going to get a kickback from the chocolate company for having chocolates, and they wanted to make sure that they sold as many chocolates as possible. It was the most important chocolate sale ever. So there's a gang in this school called the Vigils, and so they give assignments to certain students. So there's a new student in the school. His name is Jerry Renault, and the Vigils give him the assignment to not accept chocolates and not participate in the chocolate sale for a certain amount of time, just to freak out all the brothers and Brother Leon and everybody. And that the Vigils held this power over the student body and over the school. And so he does it. He refuses to sell chocolates, but then after the deadline that the Vigils gave him, he continues to not sell chocolates. He becomes a complete outcast, and it leads to complications. So it's a vaguely veiled political allegory, and it spoke to me. It was about so many things, and like I said, I mean it taught me to be a little bit more political, to be much more aware, and to question adults and authority in every possible way. As a devastating ending, Keith Gordon directed a movie version of it. And they changed the ending, and I wanted to kill Keith Gordon because they changed the ending. They completely changed the ending, and I was so angry. I like the movie. I like it up until the last 15 minutes. But that's a book, and because of Miss Nagel, I never would have read that book. And that's, you know, that and The Catcher in the Rye are the two seminal books of my teen years.
Oh, man, I love Catcher in the Rye.
It's my favorite book of all time.
People complain so much about it, and it's because
it's a great book. It's a timeless, it's a masterpiece.
They can't handle reminding themselves what it's like to be a teenager.
Yeah. No, it's a great book, and I read it when I was 14. So, you know, Perfect. It's like, you know, I read Chocolate War when I was 13, and I read Catcher in the Rye when I was 14, almost 15. And those were those two books back. Now, well, they weren't the books that I read back to back. I read many in between those two.
Yeah.
But those were the two seminal ones of my early teen years. So, and then like one of the reasons why I had such a huge reaction to Risky Business is because when that came out, I was 18 and I had just graduated high school and I was moving. So those three pieces of art in my teen years, those were really big things. And Miss Nagel, my eighth grade teacher, gave me The Chocolate War, and I will always be forever grateful for her. It opened up my mind to a lot of things. So, all right. Hey, we're appreciating teachers, as we should every day, but it is Teacher Appreciation Week. We're going to talk about teachers in movies, teachers in TV, memorable ones, and we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200 with your thoughts on that or your a shout-out to a teacher that you liked. love Dire Straits. Fantastic. Two for Tuesday continues. Yeah, man, Two for Tuesday. One artist, two songs. That's Dire Straits. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 312-981-7200. And we're talking about it's Teacher Appreciation Week. And so we wanted to mention some of our favorite teachers that we had that you want to give a shout out to and a thank you to. We would love to hear from you. Talk or text at 312-981-7200 with your favorite teacher story. We're also going to be talking about teachers in movies and teachers on TV. And Mental Floss put together a list of some of the best teachers on TV. And they include Walter White from Breaking Bad.
Great teacher.
Sure, his lectures were a little dull, even if he did have open flames in this classroom, but no one could ever accuse of Mr. White of not knowing his craft. And yes, he did steal equipment from the supply closet a couple of times and keep his burner phone in a classroom ceiling for a while, but he also turned former flunky student into his greatest protege and taught us all that when you see a product that you could greatly improve, you shouldn't let little things like a shortage of Sudafed or menacing drug lords get in your way.
Inspirational.
This is one of the best. Edna Krabappel from The Simpsons. Marsha Wallace. She was so great. Mm-hmm. Other teachers at Springfield Elementary had their cool character moments, but Mrs. Krabappel was a fan favorite from her first appearance in The Simpsons' second ever episode. Yes, she dated around, drank on the job, and slapped Bart once, okay, twice. But Edna was a teacher who wasn't afraid to say what she felt, even if those feelings were buried beneath quips of sarcasm. That school would have been boring if not for Edna's 20-year-plus years as a teacher in the same fourth-grade class. Now, I don't know that I've... Mr. Feeney, Boys Meets World.
Oh, my God.
I don't know.
Oh, I love Mr. Feeney.
Who is he?
He was the teacher on Boy Meets World, and he was like, he was their teacher when they were kids, because that show follows those actors as they literally grew up, like
right.
They literally grew up on the show. But after he stopped being their teacher, I think he might have been principal at one point, maybe. But he was the main character, Corey Matthews' next door neighbor as well.
Mm-hmm.
So he was like the mentor figure to everybody in that show, and in the final episode, they have this really great moment where they all show up to his classroom. They're all adults, like out of college and everything like that. And they all tell him how much they loved him, how much they meant. And he kind of puts on this stony, you know, exterior.
Yeah.
And then after they all leave the classroom, he turns around and he's like, oh, I love you too.
Yeah.
Class dismissed or something like that.
Wow.
He was great.
Mr. Feeney, Boy yeah. Meets World. Here's another one. Miss Frizzle. The Magic School Bus. Don't know that one.
No Magic School Bus?
The Magic School Bus's Ms. Frizzle's mantra was, take chances, make mistakes, and get messy. And what a testament that was to her adventurous, hands-on teaching approach. Miss Frizzle was the type of teacher who'd literally go the distance in the name of scientific discovery and character, and as a character, had that fantastical yet familiar vibe that made her instantly beloved. From the bottom of the ocean to the edges of outer space, the Frizz was blazing trails, setting an example for curiosity and exploration and learning, becoming an emblem for every quirkily dressed teacher in the world. So there you go.
Also voiced by the great Lily Tomlin.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
And I think Netflix is doing a new version of the Magic School Bus with, oh gosh, she was on SNL, and she's in Ghostbusters. She's the totally nutty, like...
McKinnon?
Yeah.
Kate McKinnon's
going to be the voice of the new Miss Frizzle.
Wow.
That show was huge. That was what I watched growing up. And you knew it was a good day or at least that the teacher was hungover. If she wheeled in the cart, the video cart with the TV and the VHS player, popped in the Magic School Bus.
Yeah. Miss Frizzle. Magic School Bus. And I was way past that. Oh, nice. Roland Presbyluski from The Wire. That's a great choice.
Awesome choice.
Great choice. As one of the first faces glimpsed in HBO's drug war indictment, The Wire, a sheepish Roland Prez appeared to be uncomfortable in his role as an authoritarian. He did his best police work solving puzzles and his worst while holding a gun. Disillusioned, he skittishly entered a new career as a Baltimore public school teacher, where students with one foot already in the criminal trade, took advantage of his scrambled confidence. But Prez hung on, learning to navigate a fatally broken educational system, and by the end he was steadier on his feet in front of the classroom than he had ever been as a cop. His real talent wasn't at the crime scene. It was making sure the city's youth never got there in the first place. Nice choice. Real good choice. Miss Bliss, Saved by the Bell. See, now, the only reason I know that is because it's Haley Mills played the part, and Haley Mills was one of my first crushes when I was a kid.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. My first three crushes, I'm talking about a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
First three crushes, this shows you my age. Haley Mills from, I'm saying, the original Parent Trap, going all the way back. Haley Mills, Yvonne Craig, who was Batgirl, and Barbara Feldon, Agent 99 on Get Smart. Those were my first three crushes. So that dates me right there. But yeah, but I never was a big Saved by the Bell guy, but I know who Miss Bliss is.
Mm-hmm. So, well, because that was the name of the original show that they were on. It was like
Miss
Good Morning Miss Bliss.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right, and Zach took over.
Jerk.
And Mr. Belding?
Yeah.
All right, here's a teacher right there. There you can talk about him. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. The news is up right after this. Ridiculously great song. One of my very favorite songs by both of those artists. So are we going to get a Queen twofer or a David Bowie twofer?
You know what? I kind of want to keep it a surprise.
Okay. All right.
But that's coming to us from the 815.
Okay, 815, very good. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude every weekday morning from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. 312-981-7200. We've been talking about it is Teacher Appreciation Week. And like I said before, every week should be Teacher Appreciation Week, but this is officially Teacher Appreciation Week. And we were given shout-outs to some of the teachers that inspired us that we wanted to thank. And we've been talking about teachers in the entertainment world, you know, like movie teachers and TV teachers and all that cool stuff. And if you would like to join us, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Dan in Marengo says the best movie teacher ever is Mr. Han from Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Second vote for Ray Walston there. 312 area code says, teachers make all other professions possible. Absolutely true. 224 area code says, Sasha Darnell, the greatest Head Start teacher ever. Coach Jim Roberts, two people who made you believe in yourself. That's what a great teacher does. Absolutely. So we're back to some teachers that were on TV shows. Coach Fredericks from Freaks and Geeks. You know, it's been a really pretty good year for Linda Cardellini, mm-hmm. because you know she was in that LaLorna movie, the scary LaLorna movie.
Yeah, yeah.
She's in Avengers. She doesn't do very much in Avengers, but she's in it, and she's in Dead to Me, which is a new Netflix series with her and Christina Applegate.
Yeah,
awesome is that?
Very excited to get Dan Feinberg's thoughts on that.
Yeah, I'm going to try and watch a few episodes before we get him in here on Thursday morning because I love both of those. I love both those women. Oh my God!
I was very much in love with her when I discovered Freaks and Geeks.
Oh,
and I think the first time I actually saw her though was she was Velma in Scooby Doo.
She was. Yes, she was.
And I was so in love with her.
Yep. She's great, man. She's the real deal. And I can't wait to see her teamed up with Christina Applegate. It's called Dead to Me, and it's on Netflix. So, and it just started streaming a few days ago. But Coach Fredericks, they picked from Freaks and Geeks. Most kids lucky enough to attend public school will remember struggling through the health component of physical education class, which was probably led by one of the school's coaches and completely scripted from an outdated manual. Absolutely true. Freaks and Geeks coach Fredericks was a complex character with stereotypical jock-like tendencies, but he also cared about his students and showed some humanity at various points in the show's singular season. He had a man-to-man talk with Sam about sex after a porn video confused the geeks. His feelings were hurt by a prank call, and he fell in love with Bill's mother and genuinely wanted the teenager's approval. The geeks may have hated P.E., but deep down they respected Coach Fredericks. That was such a good show, Freaks and Geeks. It was a, I mean, obviously now people look at it now and are, they, you know, they look back at it now and every single person on that show has gone on to, like, insane success. If you go back and look at that cast of Freaks and Geeks, everybody is just outrageously popular now and moved on to have an incredible incredible career. So, Will Schuster from Glee, like Breaking Bad's Walter White. Glee's Will Schuster, also known as Mr. Shu, knows what he teaches. In casting the role of an Ohio high school teacher who reignites the school's Glee Club, show creator Ryan Murphy spent months observing a number of Broadway actors in order to find just the right fit for the series, and he landed Matthew Morrison. And while he's a teacher who takes the responsibility of enriching the lives of his students very seriously, we can also see a side of his own life that what it's like outside of the classroom. Whether that means witnessing the crumbling of a bad marriage or trying desperately to win the affection of the school's guidance counselor. So, and now we get to one of the greatest, TV teachers of all time, Mr. Garvey, Key and Peele. I'm telling you, the first time I saw the original substitute teacher sketch, I nearly peed my pants laughing. It is one of the greatest, but the two substitute teacher sketches that Key and Peele have done, two of the greatest sketches in the history of sketch comedy. Well, I mean, but that's the case with 90% of the work that Key and Peele did. But I'm telling you, Mr. Garvey, Aaron, I got my eye on you, Jake Wellen. You got it?
Okay, let's take a roll here. Jake Wellen. Where's Jake Wellen at? No Jake Wellen here? Yeah.
Do you mean Jacqueline?
Okay. So that's how it's going to be.
It's just, and it just gets even, and the second one is hilarious too. You about as Spanish as Rian Seacrest with your big ass Fraggle Rock hair. Balake.
Or do you remember Mad TV when he did Coach Hines?
Yeah.
Very, he's just crazy.
But I'm telling you, the substitute teacher sketches, man.
It's amazing.
They're unbelievable. Funny every time. I can't tell you the number of times I've seen those two sketches. I have lost count on how many times I've watched those sketches. Like, no one likes a substitute teacher, and substitute teachers know better than anyone. They also know that they aren't really expected to conjugate Latin verbs or supervise frog dissection. Honestly, a substitute's main objective is to keep the students in line and make sure that they all show up for class by taking attendance, and taking attendance is the worst. Names are pronounced oddly. Some kids go by nicknames. They aren't on the official register. And on top of that, high school kids are jerks. So it's understandable that Mr. Garvey would go into the day with a little trepidation. But props to him for standing back on his ground, throwing the weight around a little bit, not allowing the back talk. Besides, who really knows how to pronounce O'Shaughnessy anyway? Get your ass down to O'Shag Hennessy's office right now and tell him exactly what you did. It's just genius, those guys, man. Key and Peele. All right, let's see. Here's Robert on WGN. Hi, Robert.
Morning, Nicholas. My mom, like your mom, my mom was a school teacher. And she raised three kids by herself. And trust me, I was an out-of-control kid.
Yeah.
But she taught us, and I was a special ed kid all through school. And she taught me, my brother, and my sister mathematics by teaching us blackjack.
Oh, wow.
and you have to understand, I was in school extremely hyperactive, we're out of control, and I would calm myself by counting cards, and I never knew I was counting cards, mind you. This is in the 60s. I didn't know what I was doing, but she actually taught her, she taught first, second, and third grade, mostly third grade in Nathan Hill School in Schaumburg. Peggy Wilson, really super great teacher, and taught these kids numbers by teaching them blackjack.
Mm.
And she'd have the whole class trying to remember what had, you know, and now, you know, there's movies about this stuff and everything, but it really keeps your mind kind of focused on what cards you had, what cards, you know.
Right.
So it was fascinating what she did, you know. And she did quite well because my brother became a doctorate in nuclear physics and became a professor. My sister's a teacher and, you know, so
it
was just fascinating that, you know, this is how she controlled three kids by making us play blackjack.
Right. So that's a unique story, Robert. Thanks for sharing it.
All right. No worries,
all right, man. Take care.
Great show always,
right, buddy.
Nicholas. You guys are the best.
Appreciate it, buddy. All right. There you go. Great story right there. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It's Teacher Appreciation Week. We're going to talk more about teachers in movies and TV. And if you want to share your favorite teacher, you want to give a shout-out to a teacher that you think deserves some attention this morning, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. All right, here's some weather. Here's your forecast from the WGN Weather Center. Today, temps mainly in the mid-40s, up to around 50. Showers become heavier and more numerous in late afternoon and into the evening. Tomorrow, thunderstorms, downpours likely, a high around 50. For Thursday, mostly cloudy skies will bring showers and thunderstorms. The temperatures will peak at the upper 60s into the low 70s. Friday, highs will reach the upper 50s in most locations, clear but chilly overnight. For Saturday, ample sunshine, highs between 65 and 70. Clouds will arrive late in the day, leading to a chance of nighttime showers. And then for Sunday, temperatures will reach the upper 60s. It'll be fair but colder overnight. Currently, it is 45 degrees at O'Hare. It's 46 at Midway, 45 degrees at the lakefront. All right, we'll take a quick break here, and we'll come back. Teacher Appreciation Week continues. We'll talk more about the teachers in entertainment and teachers that that you want to give a shout-out to right here on 720 WGN. So they went with Queen as their
they went with Queen
for their choice here on 2 for Tuesday. You hear me, 2 for Tuesday? It'll be back next week, so get your requests in then too. All right, how's everybody doing? Nick DiGilio here. We're back live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, and Steve Grzanich is coming up with the opening bell. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Talking about teachers and talking about our favorite teachers and teachers in entertainment, it is Teacher Appreciation Week. 773 area code sends a text that says, Steve Pallas was my high school English teacher. I think of him every day. He was such a huge impact on my life. He died of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma in 2006. Best teacher I've ever had. All right, Steve Pallas. 630 area code, great teacher in movies, Sidney Poitier in To Sir With Love. Yeah, absolutely. 414 area code says Mrs. Landers and Leave It to Beaver. 724 area code says shout out to all the teachers in the Chartiers Valley School District. That vast of characters had an impact on me for better or for worse. 312 area code says Craig T. Nelson and All the Right Moves. Oh, my God. It's my way or the highway, Georgia Vic. Uh, 502 area code says Dead Poets Society, Robin Williams. Yeah, okay.
Don't do it.
I can't stand that movie.
Ah, Come on.
And I don't know if you know this or not, but I'm sort of famously not a Robin Williams fan. I was never a fan. The only movie that I ever really loved him in was World's Greatest Dad, which I just think is a remarkable performance.
Boy, yeah.
And I had Bobcat on the show.
Bobcat.
I love him, man.
He's insane.
And here's the thing about Bobcat Goldthwait. You know, years ago, if you would have told me that screaming lunatic stand-up comedian from the Police Academy movies would turn out to be one of the most brilliant black comedy filmmakers ever, I would have said, you're out of your mind. He's made great movies. He makes great, great, original, dark, twisted, awesome movies.
What was the one he did with Bill Murray's brother?
God Bless America.
God Bless America. That was wild.
Amazing.
I remember watching that in my dorm room, and we were all like, yeah, man.
It's great.
It's great.
It's great. So I had Joel Murray on back in December when I showed Scrooged at my film club, and that's when we started our partnership with the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant. So we had Joel on, and I told him how much I love God Bless America. And we talked about that at length. But anyway, I had Bobcat Goldthwait on, and I told him about my experience of seeing World's Greatest Dad the first time. It was at the Landmark Century Center Cinema. It was a Friday morning when it was the day it opened. I went to like an 11 a.m. showing the day it opened. And I'm absolutely positive that most of the people in the theater, and there weren't that many, there were maybe, I don't know, 15, 20 people in the theater. Most of the people in the theater had no idea what the movie was about. And most of the people in the theater were senior citizens because it was 11 o'clock in the morning on a Friday. And I think they thought, oh, Robin Williams, World's Greatest Dad. It'll be wacky and World's Greatest Dad. He's going to be, it'll be like Mrs. Doubtfire, only he won't be wearing a dress. World's Greatest Dad, you know. Within 10 minutes, there were walkouts. Within 10 minutes.
Yeah, man.
And it gets even worse. I mean, the movie, you've seen it. The movie gets even worse as it goes along. Speaking of Under Pressure, mm-hmm. which is beautifully used at the end of the film. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so I told Bobcat this, and Bobcat was like, yeah, that was kind of our intention. So they screened it at a film festival. I can't remember which one. He and Robin Williams were there because they were best friends. They were best friends. So he and Robin Williams were there, and it may have been at Cannes. I'm not sure, but it was at a pretty prestigious film festival, and they're sitting in the theater and watching people just like groaning and, you know, flinching and then leaving and eventually just leaving. And they were laughing their asses off. They said that he said, I sat next to Robin and we sat in the back of the theater and we laughed the whole time. When every single person got up and walked out angry, we laughed.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah. It's a brilliant movie and he's brilliant in it. All right. Let's get these guys in before we get out of here. Here's Steve on WGN. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Nick, great show. My favorite teacher was Mrs. Lundquist, fourth grade, 1972, at Hoffa States Elementary School. And because she would let us watch the Cubs game when it was on, we're good kids and we can socialize and watch. And started me to like baseball. She would let us play baseball at recess. Where I lived in Buffalo, there was no baseball, and I loved the Cubs and baseball. Unfortunately, the Cubs broke my heart, and still do pretty
yeah,
much.
Yeah, well, they did last night. I can tell you that much.
They did.
Yeah. Okay, Steve. Thanks for the call.
All right. Take care.
Take care. Yeah. Any teacher that lets you watch the Cubs, that's a good teacher. So, all right. So listen, I just want to mention one more time of my film club screening tonight. I hope everybody can come out. It's one of the greatest movies ever made, literally, and one of the greatest Hitchcock movies of all time. Cary Grant in The Great North by Northwest. Very rarely do you get to see this movie on the big screen, especially in the huge theater that we have it in incredible digital sound and great visuals. And it is a great movie. So you should come out tonight. It's at 8 o'clock at AMC Rosemont 18, which is formerly MovieCo. AMC Rosemont 18 starts at 8 o'clock. $10 to get in, and parking is free. That's cheap, especially to see one of the greatest movies of all time. And then we hope we pack the place. I'll introduce the movie, and we'll have a movie chat afterwards where I'll give you some behind-the-scenes stories and all kinds of other cool stuff. Again, 8 o'clock tonight. North by Northwest, Alfred Hitchcock's masterpiece. Go to amctheaters.com right now. amctheaters.com. Go there right now. Pick out the seats that you want. Reserve them, and they will be waiting for you when you get there tonight. So, and before the movie, stop by Murray Brothers Caddyshack Restaurant, which is right down the street at the Crown Plaza Hotel. If you show them your ticket stub or prove that you're going to see the movie, you get 15% off on all your food. 15% off on all your food. The food is great there. It's a really cool room. Great service, great management. And so, and I love the fact that we have a deal with these guys now where they'll give you 15% off if you're going to the movie of all your food. And the food is great. Trust me on this. So have some dinner at Murray Brothers Caddyshack Restaurant. Get the discount and then head over to the movie theater, which is a hop, skip, and a jump over there at the AMC Rosemont 18 and see one of the best and greatest Hitchcock movies of all time in its stunning VistaVision Technicolor. So come on out and see it, and we'll see you tonight. That's at 8 o'clock. So you've seen North by Northwest a bunch of times, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've got the big Hitchcock box set at home, and yeah. I think it's my favorite, James Mason.
Oh, he's great. Yeah.
And, he's never been better except for maybe the Vincent Price, Halloween special.
Well, of course, yeah.
Say, where are the whores?
There it is, right there. Oh, the best. All right, so anyway, I'll see you guys tonight. Please, come on out. It's a once-in-a-very-long-time chance to see this on the big screen. North by Northwest, amctheaters.com. Reserve your seats now. We'll see you tonight. Starts at 8, and then we'll talk about it afterwards. All right, we'll take a break when we come back. By the way, Kevin Powell. Our good old Kevin Powell is going to talk sports with us on tomorrow's show when we come back.